Calling to order the November 4th, 2021 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I give allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic which stands in the nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, members.
Jason McKenna. Glenn Morey.
Here.
Mark Robertson.
Here.
Leslie Shipp.
Here.
Gunn. Chuck Buck.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Present.
Rich John.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslie Matheen Claiborne.
Present.
First present.
Thank you. We have presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. We have communications notices in your mailbox. And I'm going to hold the proclamations for a little bit, but if you will bear with me, I just want to reshuffle the agenda because we have some municipal officials who wanted to have a moment to speak very quickly because they have to leave to go for their budget hearings, and I want to be respectful of that. We know how important that is. So I have signed up to speak, and please, I ask you all to please be as crisp as you can so that we can move along. I have Dan Lamb. Is Dan here?
Nope. Pretty crisp.
All right. Pretty crisp, yeah. Quite crisp indeed. Jason, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, thank you, Les. Thank you. So we I think myself and Jim Scaley is also on the board. I don't, and Dan may have sent a comment in as well, but. We just wanted to urge the legislature to.
Can you speak directly to your microphone a little louder?
Yeah, I'm trying.
thank you.
Is that better? So all of us on the board, we're just urging the county legislature to vote in favor of the resolution that was presented by county highway staff regarding the Bridge New York grants. With these grants, we've actually been able to save millions of dollars for county taxpayers by having federal money that's provided to New York State to pay for 95% of the replacement costs for right now two bridges in Dryden. I believe we've applied for a third grant. And the way this benefits the county is not only financially, but also in reduction in staff time, because what happens when any town in the county or village or I don't know if the city would count, but any time we apply for a Bridge New York grant, we are managing the project. So county highway staff doesn't need to get involved in doing the any of the paperwork or working with the contractor. DOT, New York State DOT, and Federal Highway Administration have to approve designs. So it's not just what the town puts forth. The designs have to be vetted by both those agencies. And there's also community input, which is required by the grants. So that, like, for instance, both for George Road and Freeze Road, there were public meetings about the designs. So we handle, as a municipality, all of that. If that didn't occur, if the county applied for the grants instead, the county would handle all that. So we think it's a good partnership. And what County Highway is recommending, which also was approved by the F&I committee, is what we hope that the whole full county legislature would approve. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. I also have on my list here Lori Snyder. Hi, Lori. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Hi. I agree with everything that Jason just said. However, I have a statement. I am speaking as a longtime resident of Tompkins County and as the president of the Varna Community Center. I think the towns in Tompkins County, not just the hamlet of Varna, not just the town of Dryden, but all the towns in the Tompkins County need the reassurance that the county will follow custom and tradition by paying their portion of Bridge New York projects as well as other federally funded projects. To change this practice would discourage towns from pursuing federal projects to improve infrastructure and quality of life in Tompkins County. Please support the resolution to guarantee that that Tompkins County would pay their full share of projects in the county. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lori.
Do you want me to submit that in writing? Or is it recorded is sufficient?
That's sufficient? She could submit it. That would be helpful.
Yes, Lori. The clerk would appreciate if you'd submit it in writing.
Okay, I'll email it to Kathy Covert.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't see anybody else.
Dan Lamb is joining now.
Dan just did.
He did. Well, he's... There he is.
But I guess he's here. Or...
He's here.
Yeah, hi, folks. I heard my name called. I was outside.
Yeah, while you were eating dinner, we were calling your name.
Hey, yeah, thanks for giving us a few minutes to address this issue. we've had a lot of good luck with the Bridge New York program. It's brought over $4 million into the town of Dryden for bridges, and it's going to bring more money to the county as more federal funding comes into this program. So our advice to the county on this is to go with the recommendation from Jeff Smith and Highway Department to encourage municipalities to go after this money for the county, because it's saving the county money when we secure these grants by a municipal basis. And I would not add another step for review on these grants. We already go through an extensive review. Believe me, I know, because I'm working hard on getting a design approved for the Freeze Road Bridge. It's a multi-step, multi-phase process to get a bridge design approved. The last thing you want to do is add another bureaucratic hoop for the municipalities to jump through on this. We see the county as a good partner. We want to keep working together to replace these bridges because, as I said, I do think more money is coming. But I would resist adding another procedure to getting these bridges built or having the county review these additionally and beyond what New York State Department of Transportation already does for us. So that's my comment, and I appreciate you getting us to the top of the agenda so we can get to our budget hearing.
Thank you very much, and thank you for reaching out. Thank you for your thoughts. All right, I don't see anyone else, and I don't have anybody else on my list. So, well, I have one other person who signed up to speak on the privilege of the floor for the public, so I might as well just go ahead and make that happen. Since we're hearing, and that's somebody named Greg Mezzi. I wonder.
All right, well, I'll keep this brief and short. Again, my name is Greg Mezzi, resident of the town of Dryden. Here to speak today on the resolution that was passed by the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. I stand with my colleagues in the town of Dryden, Jason, Dan, and Lori. I think it's really important that we send the right message to our local municipalities because this is a great opportunity to have them do the work, to know what's best for their community, to make the recommendation, to work with New York State, to work with the federal government, to bring forward these programs. This will allow us to exponentially grow and accelerate our ability to rehab bridges in our community. So I strongly urge you all to consider the resolution as it's put forth. And know that I stand behind that as well. So I appreciate the time. I know you have a full agenda, so thanks so much for a few minutes to talk.
Thank you, Greg. And that's all the folks who I have signed up to speak to us, and we really appreciate your comments on this topic. That resolution will be coming up a little later in our agenda for a vote. All right, let's go back to our agenda, order of our agenda. We have some proclamations. I am going to start with proclamation recognizing Indigenous Peoples Month here in Tompkins County. And I will read. Whereas Indigenous people settled, inhabited, and were caretakers of the Americas for thousands of years, and whereas we recognize the fact that Tompkins County currently occupies land prior to the invasion of European settlers, there were homes and villages of the Kiyu Nation and Onondaga Nation of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, and the Haudenosaunee Confederacy also includes the Mohawk, Oneida, Seneca, and Tuscarora nations, and that these nations stretched from present-day Albany to Buffalo. And whereas on August 3rd, 1990, President George H.W. Bush declared the month of November as National American Indian Heritage Month, thereafter commonly referred to as Native American Heritage Month, the bill read in part that the President has authorized and requested to call upon federal, state, and local governments, groups, and organizations, and the people of the United States to observe such month with appropriate program ceremonies and activities. And whereas the county acknowledges that throughout our history, there have been and continue to be periods of pain, tragedy, inequity, bigotry, and injustice against Indigenous peoples. And while we acknowledge that history, we must also recognize that today and into the future, we must take action to make changes for the better. And whereas the county has begun this change movement by committing through its diversity policy and other non-discrimination policies to oppose the systemic racism towards all marginalized peoples, including the Indigenous peoples in our region. And whereas, in demonstration of this commitment, on Tuesday, July 17, 2018, the Tompkins County Legislature unanimously voted to recognize the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day, encouraging the celebration of this day in a manner that promotes respect, understanding, and friendship, combats prejudice and bias, works to eliminate discrimination stemming from colonization, and acknowledges our history. And whereas, in so doing, Tompkins County pledged to foster meaningful relationships with our tribal nations, recognizing and valuing the many contributions past and present made to our community through Indigenous people's knowledge, labor, technology, science, philosophy, arts, and the deep cultural contribution that have helped shape the character of our county. And whereas this month, the Tompkins County Legislature encourages all residents to honor and celebrate the traditions, stories, languages, and full culture of our tribal nations, and more specifically, Tompkins County's Indigenous roots, history, and contributions. Now, therefore, upon recommendation of the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, I, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim November 2021 as Native American Heritage Month in Tompkins County, and call upon all county residents to commemorate this month with appropriate programs and activities, and to renew our commitment to ensure that the rich histories and contributions of our Indigenous peoples can thrive.
signed this fourth day of November 2021. Is it the fourth day of November? Thank you. And I have two more proclamations. Ooh. This one is in recognition of our home health care aid appreciation. Whereas the County of Tompkins, New York, recognizes the nearly 300 home health aides who provide care to hundreds of residents in our area. And whereas home health aides provide high quality and compassionate health care services to those in need, especially at times of crises. And whereas home health aides work conscientiously to provide services and care, enabling individuals to remain in their homes and to live as independently as possible. And whereas November is National Home Care and Hospice Month, and November 7th through November 13th is National Home Care Aid Week. And whereas the Health Planning Council of Tompkins County, home care agencies, and other organizations in this community are sponsoring activities in recognition of the contributions of the home health care aides. Now, therefore, I, Leslie McBean-Clairborn, Chairwoman of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the second week of November 2021 as Home Health Aid Appreciation Week in Tompkins County, and urges citizens of this county to honor and celebrate this special event. Signed this fourth day of November 2021. Thank you. And more than anything else, we recognize that our home health aides, as COVID hit, became so much more invaluable to folks who needed assistance at home. So we do want to recognize and appreciate our home health aides. Thank you. Y'all can clap for the home health aides. My mother was a home health aide when she migrated to this country. It was the job that she could get at that time, and I thought she was excellent at it, and it put food on the table. So I know how hard it is, and they don't get paid enough. I'll say that out loud. And then I have one last proclamation. Oh, boy. And this proclamation is a Veterans Week proclamation. Actually, I should ask, was there anybody here to accept the proclamation for Home Health Aid Week? Right, we didn't think there was, but I just wanted to double check. No. Mary's here for veterans. No? Well, we recognize and honor them anyhow. Thank you. Okay. And our proclamation here for recognition of Veterans Week. Whereas since 1919, our country has paused at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, say that fast, to respect and recognize the diligence, duty, and sacrifice committed faithfully by the people who donned the uniforms of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and their reserve components, including the National Guard and Air National Guard. And whereas each Veterans Day provides an opportunity to remember and honor the courage, valor, and dedication of those who paid the high price for freedom by placing themselves in harm's way for the good of all. And whereas Tompkins County joins in that commemoration with its leaders conveying our deepest gratitude in paying tribute to all these individuals, especially those who consider Tompkins County home, by communicating our sincere appreciation for their extraordinary contributions to our nation and their continued support of community today. And whereas approximately 200,000 service members transition to civilian communities annually, with studies indicating that 44 to 72% of service members experience high levels of stress during their transition from military to civilian life. And whereas active military service members exiting active service to become veterans are at a high risk of suicide during their first year following military service. And whereas Operation Greenlight is an effort to show support for veterans of all military conflicts, with a special emphasis on the veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan wars, as well as raise awareness about the many challenges veterans face and the resources available at the county, state, and federal levels to assist veterans and their families. And whereas Operation Greenlight seeks to shine a light on the service of veterans, as the color green symbolizes hope, renewal, and well-being. Bear with me, I'll read it again. Whereas Operation Greenlight seeks to shine a light on the service of veterans, as the color green symbolizes hope, renewal, and well-being. And whereas Operation Greenlight's observation provides a time to salute and honor our service members in uniform who are transitioning to civilian life by switching one public-facing light bulb to green to show visible support for these veterans. And whereas veterans continue to serve our country by focusing locally through involvement with organizations including the American League, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Vietnam Veterans of America, Veterans for Peace, Team Red, White, Blue, RWB, church and other community groups, as well as civil service. And whereas organizations and businesses throughout Tompkins County wish to honor veterans on November 11, 2021, now therefore I, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, Chairwoman of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the week of November 6th through the 13th, 2021, as Veterans Week in Tompkins County, in celebration of our community of veterans, and further proclaim, in observance of Operation Greenlight, the Tompkins County Legislature encourages its residents in patriotic tradition to display a green light in a public-facing window or entry of their place of business or residence during Veterans Week, with the hopes that through this simple act of changing one light to green, we can spark meaningful conversations regarding the recognition of veterans and help green light them forward as valued members of our communities. Signed this fourth day of November, 2021. And I know that there are people here to accept this proclamation.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all of the legislators here. It's definitely my privilege to be able to bring this to you and accept this proclamation on behalf of our veterans community. I do want to note that this is the first time that I believe we've been able to proclaim a week. We've noticed that there's quite a few opportunities and events happening around that. We wanted to be able to celebrate our veterans more than just on the day, although November 11th does hold its reverence. We still wanted to be able to bring together this public thanks for the week. Also, Operation Greenlight, as you heard, this is something that's being new, being promoted actually this year by both NYSAC as well as my state association, the New York State Association for New York State Council for Veteran Service Officers. And if you've noticed when you've come around, or you'll notice tonight probably when you leave, that some of the county facilities have green lights outside of them now. So this is part of the effort that's being done in preparation for Operation Greenlight. And I do want to say thank you to Arel and Alan and their staff for making this happen. I saw one of their guys outside our building here the Human Service Annex yesterday, and he was there for probably like less than 5 minutes because I tried to get a picture of him in action, but he was gone before I got out there. But I also want to say thank you to the Roxanne Noble and Tyrone Fish, because they have a real light show in store for the airport as well. So for me, this is all getting pretty exciting to see all this happen, and definitely thankful for being part of the team of folks that are making this happen. I also want to throw out a quick thank you to the city, because they also did a proclamation yesterday, and Mayor Myrick had brought together Steve Nance, John Maragni, hope I'm saying his name right, and other staff with their facilities department, and they're also going to have City Hall lit up. So we'll have quite a few places showing the support for our veterans community throughout Tompkins County. Last thing I want to say is that few things happen solo, and especially when it's good things that are happening, a few things happen solo. And I've been fortunate to work with a team of people who have really been working hard to not only help me pull together events, but they've also on their own been helping set up events to also happen around the county. That team includes John Turner with Cuga Health Centers, Scott Rougeau with the Downtown Health Alliance, and Mary Fisk, who you'll be hearing from here shortly, and her student veteran ambassadors at Cornell University. And you'll see that list of events that I have for everybody on my website tomorrow. So just tomorrow, go to the county's website and type in veterans. But I'd like to also step back and let Mary introduce you to Mary and let her say a few words, too.
Thank you, JR, and thank you to the council for allowing us to be here this evening and for providing that proclamation for all of us, really, not just the military members of the community, but it affects all members of our community. And it's great to see the green lights, and the way I envision it, pretty soon you won't be able to see a demarcation line from where Ithaca stops and Cornell University begins, because it will all be lit green here in the future. So it's going to be it's really heartwarming to see that across the county, the city, and the university. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of it.
All right. I just want to throw out, in case anybody's wondering, Mary and I are in the same family. I'm Navy. She's Marines. Thank you.
Thank you all for your service and for your continued work with the veterans in our community. Very important. And thank you, legislature, for this. And looking forward to everybody changing one light bulb. And I don't know where you get them, but we'll figure it out. One light bulb green. We'll figure out where to find them.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
And one thing, you know, it's interesting because I thought I'd mentioned this before. You know, we do these proclamations and sometimes, you know, like, you know, what happens with them? And I remember going into Center Ithaca, Martha, one day, and Lou just came running to me and wanted me to see the proclamation that was done however many years ago that he still has hanging at his place of business, and how much he tells everybody how much he appreciated being acknowledged and recognized by the legislature and by the city council, and that it meant so much to him that he shares with all his customers. So it does mean a lot to people to get these proclamations. Okay, let's on to, let me see. Yeah, we do have executive session this evening. So just want to let you all know for the purposes of discussing personnel issues related to particular persons and positions. And we might be talking some about negotiations. Lisa, are you there?
Yes. Yes.
That's a yes. Confirmed. Okay. Very quickly, have any other public who wanted to address us? I don't remember anybody, but just in case people came in later. Nope. Okay. Any municipal officials? They already spoke to us. Okay. There's a report for legislators. Any legislators? Mike Ziegler?
Just a couple of things. I mean, obviously, we just had an election. I want to congratulate all the people who won and will be joining us here and in other boards. But I also want to congratulate all the people that lost. I know it's losing is difficult, but it's difficult to put your name in the ring at all. And certainly I think that's become harder for some reason over the last decade or so. And I want to tell you that I do appreciate all the work you did as well. So for both ends of the spectrum there, I appreciate all your efforts, and I know we all do. So also want to appreciate all the efforts of all the kids that were out for Halloween. It was nice to see a return of some normalcy to that. I know my kids were very excited. My one kid, she did a mock-up of Audrey, and she was Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors, and it was a fascinating costume. And the other one went as the Corpse Bride, which was pretty darn scary. So thank you to all the children that were out and doing that. It was nice to see that again. So, but thanks.
Thank you, Mike. That was heartwarming. Rich Dunn?
I happened to be at the City Common Council meeting yesterday, and Bill Goodman from the town of Ithaca reported, and he showed a picture of the bridge, the pedestrian bridge near Buttermilk Falls, and they're putting the planking on it. This bridge has been waiting to be finished and opened for more than a decade, I'm sure. It's, I think, very exciting that we're going to have it connect all the way to the Black Diamond Trail. And I believe the plan later on is to go all the way to Treeman Park. This will be a real community asset, and I commend the town of Ithaca for their work on it.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for sharing. Anyone else? Deborah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to salute the city of Ithaca. Its commitment to decarbonize all of its buildings actually made the Washington Post. So congratulations, Common Council, and congratulations, Luis Aguirre-Torres. And I hope you have good luck finding the money for all of this. We'll be watching. Thank you.
Deborah, Martha?
Yeah, just to pick up on the trails theme, a new section of the Dryden Rail Trail was opened last week or so, 2 weeks ago. And it's short but beautiful. It's between Stevenson Road, kind of, you know, just east of Cornell's main campus, and Game Farm Road. And it was a lot of hard work by Dan Lamb, especially to negotiate with the state of New York to be able to go through that part of the Game Farm. So you can go in, and then you have to go back again. It doesn't connect to Game Farm Road yet. The town of Ithaca, town of Dryden, and the county are working on what the crossing would look like, what kind of safety signals and signs would be put up on Game Farm Road to get you to all the way to, and that would then get you to Trumansburg by connecting you all the way through Black Diamond, the Waterfront Trail and Black Diamond. So we're really building a a through traffic system. And but if you have just a few minutes, that's a quick, beautiful walk to see a part of Cascadilla Creek you've never seen before.
Thank you, Martha. Anyone else? All right. I'm going to do another little bit of reshuffle and ask the county attorney has a special report for us. Jonathan, are you there?
I am here, yes. So as you know, I periodically update the legislature on the hydro project. And I've been doing it annually, except I didn't do it last year because of COVID. So this year going to be a little more comprehensive update. Terry Carroll, who is our new sustainability coordinator, planning, is going to take over the oversight of that project from me as I'm leaving. So he's going to do a brief presentation, but just to give a little background to remind everybody, the county entered into an agreement with Gravity Renewables, for them to purchase and upgrade a hydro facility in Waterloo, which is over 100 years old and not functioning very well. The agreement is essentially the county buys all the electricity generated by that hydro plant. In return, we get credits on our bill from NYSEG, and we also get the renewable energy credits from that facility. And, you know, it's been a terrific way, obviously, to generate renewable energy and to, you know, diminish our dependence on fossil fuels. And so far, you know, it's all gone great, and Terry will go through a brief presentation, and then we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Okay, Terry.
All right, let's dive right in here. So I'm going to share my screen. Can everyone see that?
Yes.
Yes, you can.
All right. So as Jonathan was saying, you know, there's a little bit of the background. You know, this whole process kicked off back in 2014. You know, some of you were around for that. And when it was finalized in 2016, the county started to receive the power and the renewable energy certificate, what we call RECs. Many of you were there when the powerhouse was rededicated to honor Stu Stein, to see the trash rake after it was installed. And I think the latest updates that we have are more related around some of the billing and maybe the financial piece of everything. So, you know, to reiterate something that Jonathan said, with our contract with Gravity, we get two different things. We get the monetary credit for the electricity that's produced. So some people think we get the electricity directly. That's not the case. We just get the monetary credit associated with the generation. The actual electricity, the electrons that are being created, just go into the grid and get fed to where it's needed. The second piece that we get are these renewable energy certificates. And those certificates demonstrate proof that the electricity was generated from a renewable resource. This is actually a picture of one that Jonathan showed me early on. And it's something that, you know, we need as a community, as a county, to show that we're using 100% renewable electricity. So when, you know, Darby, Kylie, or someone from my department comes in and talks to you about our greenhouse gas emissions and you see them decreasing, a lot of that has to do with the renewable energy certificates that we purchase. And so what's happened recently is that not only are energy costs starting to go up, you know, during COVID, we saw them hit, you know, some pretty low numbers. They're starting to go way up now. You might have seen news stories about the cost of natural gas, propane, electricity. The same thing is happening. You know, a lot of our electricity gets created at peak times by natural gas, and that causes the prices to go up as well. So electricity prices are going up, but along with that, there's an increasing demand for renewable energy certificates. You know, New York has some really strong climate goals, and businesses, local governments, the state itself, everyone is looking to be able to prove that they're getting their electricity, you know, through a renewable resource. And so the value of those certificates are also going up. You know, so what we're really seeing is that our generation is great because it's not only stabilizing the price that we pay for electricity, but it's also stabilizing how much we would have to pay in order to get certificates to prove that we're using 100% renewable resource. So, you know, we're really happy with the deal so far. The next two slides, there's a lot of information. We're happy to share this with folks later on, but it's basically, and you know, there's one little thing that I want to point out on this slide, and you'll see kind of that third, fourth row down, you'll see it says estimated credits from February 2020. And that's because in the latter half of 2019 and early 2020, NYSEG spontaneously decided to stop providing us all the information that we used to get on our bills. And so unfortunately, we no longer have a sense for exactly how much the electricity we're generating is worth. We can come up with round estimates, but in order to double check NYSEG's numbers and make sure that it's actually correct, we just don't have that information. And so what we've done is we've worked with Gravity to come up with a couple of different scenarios and are showing you kind of what our best estimate is for how much those credits were worth to us from the electricity that was produced. You know, at the same time, you'll see a line there that says estimated REC value. So renewable energy certificates, they're a volatile thing. They can range in price. You know, back when this first started, they were probably, you know, when I say first started, when the county first entered into this agreement, they were probably worth about $2. The last time I talked with Gravity, they were worth about $15.50. And so, you know, they can change from you know, month to month, week to week, even day to day sometimes. You know, our best estimate is around this period of time, it was around $12 a megawatt hour. And so you can see about how much that was worth for the county. And you'll see that bottom line that in some months, you know, it was a good deal for us. And then those months in parentheses, it was, you know, maybe not such a good deal. And so, you know, covering just this amount, you know, this period of time, it might not look like such a good deal, you know, about $12,000 in the hole a little bit. But then you get to the next period of time.
We can't see it because your picture's there. We're going to fix it.
Oh. It's better if you turn behind me.
All right.
There, that's better.
Okay. So I'll go back a slide just so you can see again. So if that number that you see, it estimated total value to Tompkins County, it's in parentheses because it's a negative number. So basically we paid about $12,800 more than what we, you know, would have gotten in terms of monetary credits and rec credits. But if we look at this most recent period, you know, from July until 2021, or from June 2020 to July 2021, what we see is kind of a reversal of that. And a lot of this has to do with the more recent increases in prices. You know, that previous one, we were looking at those COVID lows. Now we're starting to see this post-recovery high. And right now, when we add up together the price of those RECs, the total monetary credit that we're getting from the electricity itself, you know, and helping us stabilize the rates, you know, we're up about $29,000. So that's a pretty good sign. And what we're seeing right now is that this is actually an extremely good year for hydro. You are probably all familiar with the water and the rain that we've been receiving. The same thing's obviously happening just a few miles up the road in Waterloo. And so we're expecting this to continue, you know, into the next couple of months. So we're excited to see what that data looks like. But again, I'll just call attention to the fact that we don't actually know exactly how much the credits we're getting from NYSEG are worth because we can't check it. They're just not giving us that information. And we've talked with them, Lisa and I had a conversation with them about this. And, you know, hopefully we can get some traction with this down the road. So this is what I was referring to, kind of our best estimation. You'll see a few different lines there. That bottom most gray line is kind of our low value estimate, not taking into account the price of renewable energy certificates. The black solid line is our high value estimate, not including the certificates. And then those two dotted lines kind of correspond, the high and low scenarios, but in this case, accounting for renewable energy certificates. And what we didn't include here and probably should have is, you know, a solid line across that $100 number. And that line represents kind of how much we pay for the electricity. We pay $100 per megawatt. So when it's above that $100 line, that's when we're in the black, so to speak. When it's below, that's kind of when we're paying more than what it's worth. And so those certificates definitely make a big deal in terms of our monetary value for all of this. Another way of looking at this is looking at kind of what we've been able to do since 2018 with the trash rake. And so in 2018, you know, the company was able to invest in some infrastructure improvements, a trash rake. I have a video I'll show at the end that basically lifts out a lot of the debris and the detritus that gets caught up in the turbines. And what that's enabled us to do is also to produce more electricity there. And that's also really helping us to get not only more certificates, renewable energy certificates, but more monetary credits and really helping to offset. And so, you know, when this deal first started, we were looking at, you know, maybe about a quarter of our electricity countywide being met, our needs being met with this project. In a good year, it can be anywhere from half to three quarters, you know, so it's a pretty fantastic improvement that we're seeing, you know, in part due to the trash rake and in part due to some great hydrological years. And so this is something that, you know, Gravity, you know, especially wanted us to mention to all of you is a really a thank you for the 20-year commitment. So our deal with Gravity Renewables is a 20-year deal. It started in 2016. We're going through 2036. And that, you know, commitment has enabled not only that, you know, trash rake to be, you know, installed, which is, you know, helping with invasive species and debris removal, but it's also having a really big impact in terms of better lake level control. So, you know, prior to Gravity taking control of this station, the previous owner was often only running it during peak electricity times, which meant that the lake levels weren't being adjusted as well as they should be. And so that ended up seeing a lot of high water levels on the lake that actually caused some dock flooding for some local residents. And since Gravity's taken it over and with our deal, they're running it on a more consistent base that lines up with what the federal government likes to see. And it's really helped in terms of the lake level control. So, you know, we're really excited about that. The investment in the local community. So Waterloo is seeing some fantastic things in terms of their tax base, you know, and the plant's going to, they know that the plant's going to be around for the next, you know, 20 years, if not longer. So they can make long-term decisions based on that, as well as the economic conditions improving for the employees of the actual facility itself. And then there's the environmental benefits. You know, we mentioned the trash rake, you know, increasing our generation up about 33%. So when you look at that from a climate change standpoint, that's fantastic. That's more renewable electricity being put onto the grid for a pretty minimal investment. And so a lot of that has to do with what, you know, the county was willing to do with making that first deal. And we're seeing that benefits, you know, long past today. And so this is the trash rake. For those of you that haven't seen it, it's a really brief video, but you'll see right there, it's essentially just a metal skirt that pulls up and, you know, runs pretty continuously and pulls, in that case, I guess it's a lot of seaweed and probably all sorts of invasive water, you know, plants. And that's obviously not my area of expertise. But this is a pretty good example of what we're seeing there. And you can see how much really gets taken off. It's pretty remarkable. And so that's really not only helping the water quality, the flooding issues, but it's also helping in terms of the generation as well. So really happy to see that going. And you'll see right there that, you know, this is what we would have expected, that bottom kind of dotted line. That's what you would expect with generation without the trash rake. Now you're looking at that top line, kind of what we would be expecting with the trash rake now installed. And so, and then that solid blue line shows the actual annual generation. So, you know, we're pretty excited about having that in place and really excited to see what it does in the future as well, especially with these high water years. And the last slide that I'll show you is kind of coming back to that point about the water channel. So, you know, the Waterloo facility actually has a pretty incredible impact. And so I didn't realize this until I went and toured the facility, but, you know, the Waterloo facility, you know, helps not only control the water in Seneca Lake, which you would expect, but it carries, you know, even further up, you know, all the way to Canandaigua Lake. And I think even beyond that as well. And so it's playing a pretty important role in the system, along with the Seneca Falls facility, which Gravity also runs in partnership with other municipalities. And it's enabling, you know, our facility in particular is being able to control the water levels in these different facilities and really preventing a lot of the flooding that would otherwise occur. And so, you know, I haven't had a chance to talk to them after these last couple of days and, you know, the last week where we've just seen so much rain, but I'm sure the water level is pretty high and they're doing their best to evacuate it as soon as possible. So, you know, really kudos to the legislature for being involved in a project like this. It really has tremendous benefits, you know, long before, you know, beyond what the monetary benefits are and the climate benefits. It's really, you know, physically helping that local community. So really have to applaud the legislature with that decision. So that's, you know, a really brief overview. I'm happy to answer any questions and we can go from there.
Hi, Terry. I mean, obviously, this I think is a big success. I think everybody kind of thinks that. I'm wondering, our planning department actually did a survey a number of years ago about other opportunities, basically opportunities right here in Tompkins. Some of them weren't viable for private companies, but I didn't know maybe with the RECs going up so much, if we've kind of investigated some of those other opportunities and maybe they are viable now. I mean, generations, obviously, it's great to have all these other things, but we still need to generate it. So have we been able to do that, or are we planning to do that? Or?
You know, it's definitely something that we can investigate. You know, Gravity has talked to me about, you know, they're looking at opportunities around the state and would love to explore things further. You know, obviously, if it could be done within the county, you know, an even better situation. The REC prices, you know, certainly help that. And if, as long as they continue to go up, it'll make, you know, renewable energy, not just hydro projects, but any renewable energy project a little bit more viable. I think the thing that we're really looking at right now and seeing how it pans out is, along with everything else that's supposed to be in it, those two bills that are going through the federal government right now. You know, there was some early talk about having some additional incentives in there for, you know, repowering existing dams or, you know, helping out some run of river situations. And so if that goes through, I think things become even more viable, but it's certainly something that we'll take a look at down the road.
Thanks, Gary. I mean, Auburn did those redos up in, and they're amazing. I mean, they're brand new and they're making like $100,000, I think, a year off the one. Not that that's why they did it, but it certainly had multiple benefits. So.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Martha, then Dan.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Terry. And a nod to Jonathan. People may say, why was Jonathan involved in this? Because it was, you know, some years worth of legal work to figure out the contract and to make things work. Terry, the issue of NYSA giving us estimated information, was that, now I'm sort of clicking back to this meeting that happened this morning with the Public Service Commission. Was that related to that part of that conversation with PSC?
No, it's a separate issue, unfortunately. The situation was they used to, if you look at our bills kind of prior to 2020, they would provide us kind of their amounts that they were, you know, giving us for the generation of the electricity. Nowadays, what we get is across, you know, 7, 8, you know, bills, they'll give us a monetary amount, but we won't know necessarily how much they're valuing the actual kilowatt hours at. We have to try to backtrack calculate it, but you know, then we're just kind of taking them at their word that they gave us the right amount. You know, they gave us the right amount based on a kilowatt hour value that we don't have. And so that's really where the issue lies, is we would really like for them to resume giving us kind of how much that kilowatt hour basis is that they're, you know, valuing the generation at.
I mean, we get a bill that says kind of every other month, they actually read the meter, and every other month we get an estimated bill. And like I would say 100% of the time, we've overpaid. And the next month we get a little bit of a, you know, a credit, you know, it's not a big deal in a household budget, but you multiply by every household they serve. And it's just, in any case, doesn't seem fair. Is that what's going on? I mean, that seems outrageous.
So if I could explain, so it used to be that the bill just had more detail. They give us a bill which says, well, it's many bills. The county has a lot because our buildings are divided up into many bills. But the bills have on them the amount of electricity we use, and the cost of that. The issue is the credit. Right now they have a number you get, you know, on, let's say the airport bill this month, there's $5,000 of credit. But it doesn't break down how they determine that $5,000. That's the issue. We used to be able to piece that together. Now we know what we're getting in credit, but to figure out exactly how they establish that, what numbers they use, you kind of have to backtrack and estimate. So it just takes longer and we're not exactly sure. I mean, we know what we ended up with is how they got there. There's just fewer details on the bill.
Okay. It just feels like a complete lack of transparency. We're just supposed to trust them on the value of this. That does not seem right at all. Okay. Thanks very much.
They're from NYSEG and they're here to help.
Thank you. Dan and Mike Lane.
What do we do with the renewable energy credits? Do we save them? Do we sell them?
Well, that's a really good question. At the moment, we do nothing. As Terry showed you that certificate, it's sitting in a file in my office. There may be an issue in the future of, I mean, for a long time, they were worth very, very little. I mean, let me give you an example. The first year we did this, it was probably worth about $2,000. This past year, it's maybe worth like $70,000. So it raises the issue of whether we should do something with those credits now and in the future, which Terry will bring back in the future. I mean, you don't get to claim the credit if you do something else with it. But there's a possibility you can take that money and do something which is even of greater environmental benefit. But at the moment, we do nothing. We basically have retired them. And it's only very recently that they've become really valuable.
Thank you. So to follow up.
First, Mike, and then you.
Just curious, who buys the power from the big dam at Waterloo?
Jonathan, do you know?
Yeah, that's a complex question. There's a deal with another county, but it's not yet finalized. and it's taken a really long time, the process with FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, because they have to change the power generation and everything. So that deal really isn't finalized. So I don't know, but it will be with another county, and hopefully that will happen soon.
So there's no opportunity for us there.
Financially, I mean, there's the opportunity perhaps, but financially not really viable because of the remote net metering credits that you'd get would make it not financially viable for us.
Deborah?
Yeah, I want to follow up on Dan's question. Is there a market for these things? And you said you've retired. Can we sell the retired ones? I mean, it would seem to me that we would be using.
To answer that, if we retired a credit 5 years ago, that credit really has very little value now, okay? And it didn't have much value then. It's really like the credit for this year and future years that have some value. Yeah, there's a market. And basically, if we wanted to, Gravity would sell it for us. And, you know, without any markup of their expenses. That's the sort of long discussion over whether that makes sense or not. But, yes, there is a market for them. You use particular individuals who are experts at marketing those things. It's not something you just, you know, put in the newspaper. But yeah, there is a market for them now. Yes.
I mean, we should add, so the only way that you can claim that you're using 100% renewable electricity is if you can match 100% of the electricity that your municipality or business used to a renewable energy certificate. And so in order for us to continue to make that claim that we're using 100% renewable electricity, we'd have to retire the requisite number of RECs to offset that. You know, what we have noticed with our bills is that there might be a situation right now where we have more RECs. We've purchased more RECs, or we're getting more RECs than the actual electricity that we're using. And that could enable us to maybe take advantage of selling some of our RECs that are at a higher price. You know, this starts to get into complicated territory that I think is probably better spent maybe down the line, because there's REC markets in New York and Massachusetts and national. So, but right now we're talking with Gravity about what the situation would look like. And I think probably next year we'll come with some options.
Yeah.
Something that we take up in peak at some point.
Yeah. It's something to take up. But like Terry says, you can't both sell it and claim the benefit from it.
Right.
It's one or the other. So it's a long discussion of whether it's beneficial to do that or not.
Right. So when you say you retired it because you used it to offset electricity.
Basically, we did nothing with it and claimed it as an offset. Basically.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Sounds like a good thing for Peak to take up at some point. Martha,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
No.
Yeah, another thought is there, with the heavy rains, has there been any point where there was more water flow than, more energy created than we could use? And I'm not sure if I'm even asking the right question. And so leading to, would it make any sense to invest in battery storage that might enable more energy to be captured out of that facility?
So the facility itself, when there's a really high water event, you know, we have four turbines in there that can run at full speed, and they're just going to pump right into the grid, no problem. When it's a really high water event, what they do is they have a diversion kind of, you know, set a basically diversion to divert the water around. And so, you know, that enables better control of lake levels and prevents flooding and all that. Right now, we haven't seen a situation where they have to do what they call curtailment, where they have to stop the turbines from running because the grid can't handle the amount of electricity that's being put into it. So right now, the bottleneck is less that it's producing too much energy. It's just that we don't have enough turbines to always take advantage of how much water there is. But it's a rare scenario. You really see it on really, really high water days and weeks, and then it doesn't last for very long. Most of the time, the turbine, the four turbines that we have there are more than enough.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Jonathan, thank you. Terry, thank you. Anything else for the Thomas Miller, Terry?
No, and you could count that as my report and skip me later.
Oh, that's good information to have and to know what we're doing with those. So thank you. Take care, Terry.
Thank you.
All right, in the spirit of shuffling, I have some other people who had asked also about trying to get out of here early, so bear with me, and I'd love to take up the consent agenda at this point. So consent agenda are resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committee. I will read those titles. We have one appointment to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Marion L. Wilson, at large member, term expires December 31st, 2022. From the Planning and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A, continuing Sustainable Energy Advisory Board, ID 10424. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Resolution B, Fall 2021 Community Celebration Grant Awards, ID 10423. Resolution C, Recommendation of Appointment to Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Board of Directors, ID 10482. Public Safety Committee, Resolution D, Budget Adjustment, Corrections Division, Travel, Training, and Medical Supplies, Sheriff's Office, ID 10390. Resolution E, Acceptance of Funding from Office of Indigent Legal Services to support the provision of web-based legal research services for assigned council panel attorneys, ID 10425. Resolution F, Authorization to accept coordinated care services donation and budget adjustment, Sheriff's Office, ID 10428. Resolution G, support of the Tompkins County Centralized Arraignment Plan and request for approval by the Office of Court Administration, ID 10459. From Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution H, authorization to accept awards for various provision of services to veterans, military service members, and their families to the Department of Veterans Services, ID 10441. From Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution I, audit of final payment, Paragon Environmental Construction Incorporated, fuel facility, Ithaca Tompkins International Airport, ID 10446. Resolution J, resolution authorizing a public hearing in accordance with Section 147F of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, ID 10448. Government Operations Committee, Resolution K, designation of newspaper. Okay. Who said that? Mike Sigler, all right. Then Resolution L, correction of errors, ID 10445. May I have someone move the consent agenda, please? Moved by Amanda Champion, seconded by Foreman. Let's vote on the consent agenda.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Greg Maury?
Yes.
Martha Roberts?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Klein?
Yes.
Corman?
Yes.
Mike Blaine?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Nice, zero no's.
You, that carries unanimously. Yes, Mike.
If I could just make a request.
Yeah.
If Rich could talk about Resolution G when it's his turn in public safety, I'd appreciate that, just because that seems bigger and it doesn't, you know what I mean?
I'm kind of a big yeah, I agree.
It off of consent agenda.
I, you know, I know.
Think about that. All right, I hear you. We can use some information.
I can spend about 25 minutes on it.
Well, yeah.
All right. Thank you for indulging me with shuffling things around. I'm going to jump right into reports by the county administrator, county attorney, and director of finance. We already got Jonathan's report, and you should have received this afternoon some additional information as well. County administrator. Lisa Holt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have from County Administration three brief reports tonight. One on the Shared Services Plan, second on Reimagining Public Safety, and third on COVID. So, and with me tonight is we have Amy Hendricks, Deanna Carithers, and Dominic Recchio to report out on these items. So I'm going to turn it over to Amy for the update on the Shared Services Plan.
All right. Thank you, Lisa. So the Shared Services Draft Plan has been shared with all of you and is also on the Shared Services website. The panel has met and held three public hearings on the plan. There are two recommended shared services for 2022, including purchasing some highway cutting edges, so some joint purchasing efforts, as well as the expansion of the Municipal Health Insurance Consortium. How the shared services panels work is at this time we're providing you with the overview of that recommendations. You'll find in that document that there is also recommendations for review in 2023 when we can spend more time looking at some of these items. And then in December, the panel comes back together. If you have other updates or things that you want to share with the county administrator, the panel will come back in December, the week of December 21st, to vote on the shared services. And then at that time, the plan is finalized, it's no longer draft, and it is submitted to the state as long as it's approved by the county administrator. It becomes their plan at that point. So that's the very broad thing with the shared services. Typically, we start these plans a little earlier in the year, but something else was going on around April, May, and this got delayed a little bit, but that is the plan for 2022.
All right, thank you, Amy. And like Amy said, we all got it by email, and people should have copies on their desk. Questions or comments? Dan Klein.
Thank you. Just one set of corrections, I think, that need to be made under Municipal Broadband, number 7. That the plan department's coordinating two studies. It's now one study, a study. And it's not related to municipal broadband, in my opinion. Municipal broadband to me implies that the municipality would own it. I know it doesn't quite say that. So if that's interpretation, I think the word municipal should be eliminated. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Martha.
Thanks, Leslie. Amy, did you say these other items, let's see, of 8 items are things that you would consider in 2023 or consider for 2023?
Consider for 2023. So they would be reviewed and updated in 2022 potentially so that we have a path forward for 2023 or in future shared services plans.
Okay, that's what I thought, because it's something we have to do every year. Okay, so this is the list that you'd look at next year.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Any other comments now? No other comments. You can still, you know, as you read and digest, send any other comments to Amy as she Thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. All right, who's next?
Thank you. Next would be Deanna for a reimagining public safety update. And I see our partner, Shelley Michelle Nunn, is also here from the city.
All right, welcome, Deanna and Shelley.
Thank you, and I'd also like to let Mr. Super know that my dog, Max, dressed up as a pumpkin for Halloween. So, can you all see
Max
my screen?
Pumpkin dog.
Yes. Can you all see my screen?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
It's not in presentation mode.
This is slideshow. Okay, let me try one thing. This is what I... Just one second. Let me try another. Can you see this now, the PowerPoint?
Yes, you can.
Okay. All right. This PC. Thank you. All right. I think I go back. I'm having quite the technical issues this morning. And Dominic, who knows everything, is not here to save me. It's not his fault.
I'm not sure exactly which advice to give you, Deanna. I don't want you sharing your whole screen, so.
Oh, man. Let me try something else. This is quite, it's like the science project in eighth grade, and it's embarrassing. You can't fix it. Can you see this now? The...
Why is that working? Hey, Jan.
Yes. Uh-huh.
No, you're right. I was just going to say, click on from the beginning.
I am, and it's not working.
Okay.
That's the issue.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. So we're going to just go the old-fashioned way for those who don't have. We're rolling up our sleeves. There's no embarrassment here. I think we've all embarrassed ourselves enough over this during this COVID environment, so I'm rolling with it today. So thank you for your understanding, and I will, in my performance improvement plan, I'll make sure I put down some kind of technology training. So our charge here, this is where I'm standing from. So we always emphasize that we are working through Executive Order 203, which was the assessment of our law enforcement systems, attempting to center minoritized communities, specifically communities of color. Recommendation one here, we have this listed in the slide because we jointly do these presentations, and I'd like to thank my colleague, Shelley Michelle Nunn, who did the presentation yesterday to the city, which is the redesign of the City of Ithaca Police Department. So, again, as a part of our transparency in the process, we want to tell you where we are as of this month. Okay? Our progress here, specifically, we've done several internal kickoff meetings for our plans. We met with the Sheriff's Office and the Ithaca Police Department regarding officer wellness. We know that this has been a challenging time for all folks in our communities, and as we transition and work through these, the reimagining public safety process, we want to kick off one of the initial plans in terms of officer wellness. We know we have our employee assistance program. We also are looking at potential peer-to-peer work, but again, wanted to have the level-setting conversation with our colleagues to move that process forward. We also met with the district attorney and assigned counsel regarding the public disclosure of information. And we met with Measures for Justice. That particular group is a group that works nationwide on public disclosure. So they had different types of dashboards, different types of metrics that we can test, and we can also do an internal assessment of how we publicly disclose information. And so we're just looking at different partners as a part of our overall research as we think about these different plans, learning about what the other communities are doing. In addition, we are looking at the process for launching the healing plan. We know that this is, in my mind, one of the foundational, most important plans of, and within the process. We recognize that as a community, we cannot move forward unless we work through this acknowledgement, having people of color work together within intergenerational work, and also working with law enforcement and also other populations in the community. And so we spent a significant amount of time thinking through, bringing in stakeholders and learning, and also listening to some of the feedback that we received via the website tool, because there's this healing plan has been one of the areas in which our community members have commented. In addition to some of the internal kickoff meetings that are listed here, we're also looking at the recruitment plans. We'll be also meeting with the Sheriff's Office tomorrow regarding the implementation of the launch of the pilot program as well. I'd like to thank my colleague, Dominic Recchio. For the next year, we will have monthly print ads of the Reimagining Public Safety progress and plans. So if you go to your Tompkins Weekly this week, actually, I think Dominic laughed at me because I took like 500 copies of the plans that was of the report. And so in there and within your in Tompkins Weekly and other places, you'll see here we have a space in each one for folks who may not want to go to the library or different places. And so they can comment and send that information out to us. And so we will have a weekly ad about the progress that we're making. So, and again, we'll also have postcards that will be developed. In addition, we are continuing to host our website training sessions. We hosted one last week. And then this morning, Dominic and I hosted a website training for some of our senior community. And so they asked really amazing questions, and we look forward to continuing that work. All right. Another important point we'd like to highlight is that the CJC product director search is underway. We'd like to thank the community members who have volunteered their time and the folks at the city and the county, and including our elected officials from both the city and the county who have labored in the process. And we're grateful for their service, and that process is underway, and we hope to make an announcement in the next few weeks. The Community Justice Center location. This question was raised in multiple forms, and so we did a tour of county buildings, assessed location in terms of cost for maintenance, location in relationship to the joint plans, and also looking at accessibility. And so from that overall review in terms of space availability, we have identified the Tompkins County Mental Health Department, knowing that the Community Justice Center will be an autonomous stand-up group that will be joint effort of the city and the county. There are multiple offices there in the mental health building, including conference room, and they would have their own separate space to be able to do the work that they need to do. So we've announced that location. Again, launching next plans for the city. They're going to be having a plan for renaming the Ithaca Police Department. That will be out there. We're encouraging folks to comment on. We'll be examining alternative response models. We'll be looking at traffic enforcement data, just understanding what's in the system. Again, continuing the work with the district attorney and assigned counsel, officer wellness and recruitment and retention. When we say a plan launch, there are multiple steps in the plan launch. One is the notification to the community so they can will know what the plan is listed online. That'll also include community engagement in a work group. And in terms of the implementation and understanding and input in the process, that'll also include community forums. That will also include work product that is developed from the work. And also will be part of the routine updates. And so there are lots of steps that we will be doing in the process. But again, we want you to be aware of what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we're doing it. And so I know that we have a long agenda. And so I will conclude the presentation there, and I'll stand for any questions you may have. And I'll stop sharing inappropriately, apparently.
Are there any questions, comments? Thank you, Deanna. Thank you, Shelley. Rich?
I'd just like to say thank you to Deanna and Shelley. We've had a lot going on with talking about the advisory board and the CJC setup, and you both really have worked very well collaboratively. So thank you.
Thank you, Rich.
Others?
Quite a bit going on, so thank you all for the continued work in moving this forward. We need to, and for continuing to update folks so they know that we're not just stagnant, things are happening, they are moving, so thank you. All right. Okay, Lisa.
And then finally, we have a COVID update for you, last but not least, for sure.
All right. Let's hope that this will go through. Here it is, our COVID update. And you can see how long we have been doing these updates. And Frank will be joining me on some of this. So since we last spoke, the data, we do currently have three hospitalized. Unfortunately, we have not reported any deaths since we last met, and we're hovering around the 100 active case count mark. Vaccine doses have still continued to trickle up slightly, but Frank will talk more about that changing starting tomorrow. There has also been a lot of press that we have put out. I know Frank has been very busy today getting ready for our COVID vaccine clinics for youth that will be starting tomorrow. We've provided updated demographic data and have planned for the booster information. We have provided information on that. We also updated Halloween COVID-19 guidance and talked about what is contact tracing while translating that information. Another piece, too, that I'll mention is we have run over 670 samples in our surveillance testing program here in the county, along with other municipal partners. We continue to add on new municipalities into that program, and I know the city of Ithaca started working through their own municipal surveillance testing program today. So we continue to work on that. We've brought on 1.5 FTEs, and the two individuals that are doing the driving and sample collection have been really helpful in helping our employees provide samples and participate in that program. The next slide talks a little bit about our COVID-19 hours and our expenses over time. You can see that we continue to have a lot of expenses related to that. A main driver of the COVID expenses that are non-employee is that surveillance testing, as well as the community testing costs, as well as then you see our total employee hours spent on COVID and COVID relief, as well as some of those overtime pays and comp time. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Frank to talk more about vaccine and the rest.
Good evening, everyone. Before I jump into vaccines, wanted to point out that earlier this week, we actually dropped from high transmission to substantial transmission on the CDC's scale, which is good news if you look at the map. We're the only upstate county currently in that status. That's good news. That means we're heading in the right direction, and then we have a less than 100 cases per 100,000. The next goal is to get down below 50 cases per 100,000, because that's when the indoor mask recommendations from the CDC is lifted. So still got some room to do, but we're doing well, and hopefully that trend will continue. On the vaccine front, good news. On Wednesday, the Pfizer vaccine was fully approved for 5 to 11-year-olds. And tomorrow, Friday, 2 days later, we will be vaccinating 600 children with 600 more scheduled for Saturday as well. So we put out the registration links today through our local school districts, our private schools, our pediatrician's office. It actually took 20 minutes for the 1,200 appointments to fill completely up. So good news. There's demand out there. We're also planning for clinics next weekend as well, same Friday and Saturday. So we'll do the same process where those links will get sent out through those community partners. The reason that we're not publishing them on our website or just making them public links is, quite frankly, we don't have the resources to be a regional vaccination clinic. And many of the counties around us are choosing to go the route of allowing their pediatric offices to just handle the vaccines for the 5 to 11-year-olds. But as we have throughout the pandemic, we believe the most efficient way to move through this is to have mass vac sites. And our pediatric offices have agreed, and they are partnering with us. So they will be there with some of their staff being part of the vaccinations teams on the weekend. So we've got a really good setup there. CHS has allowed us to use the mall site, which is great. We've had partners that have provided books for every kid to get a book. We have different entertainment there for the kids to help them navigate this. And of course, we're going to try to get them in and out as quickly as possible so they can get back to their days and the rest of their weekend. But really good news that we're moving through this. And so, you know, for reference, we have about 5,700 5 to 11-year-olds. And right now, we are planning to offer just under 4,000 appointments at the Mass site. So we're going to put a big chunk of that already behind us with first doses before Thanksgiving, if all goes to plan. And then from there, we'll identify any gaps that exist and work with partners to fill those gaps.
Frank, that is excellent. I know you want to continue, but please. I don't want to hear people saying nothing about Tompkins County. I'm going to get up and see if they do. Because we really are, I mean, you all are doing amazing work. So thank you for that, and all the partners as well. Sorry to cut you off. Are you done?
Yes. Yep, I think we're done.
I got excited there for a minute. When you work with children all day, every day, it's like, please, let's get them vaccinated. So thank you for that. Hands up. Leslie.
Frank, thanks so much. I can't tell you how wonderful it was to be in the middle of a Zoom meeting today, get a text that let me know in 20 minutes I will be receiving an email, and it came through. I was in my next Zoom, but that's okay. And I went right on the site, popped right in, was able to register my child for a Saturday vaccination.
Yes.
Kudos. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you to the school system. Thank you for the partnership and the leadership. This is definitely the easiest step I've had to take, whether it was trying to register my in-laws back in the beginning of this, through getting my own appointment, or my son when he became eligible, when the 12 to 18-year-olds were eligible. This is the best. So thank you so much.
All right, we're only getting better. Shauna.
Yeah, I agree. My son is getting an appointment, a shot tomorrow at 5:05. He doesn't know about it yet, but you know, tomorrow at 4:30. And I did have a few questions as far as I've been asked by some constituents about if we were going to have a registry for the kids. And I know we did for the adults. It sounds like vaccines easily available here, and we're just going to spread it out. It might not make sense to have a registry.
Yeah, my hope is we're going to vaccinate them so quickly we don't need a registry. So
great.
Hopefully before Thanksgiving, everyone that wants an appointment will be able to have found one either through us or through a local pharmacy.
That's great. Second question was about transportation and people that might not have transportation to the mall site.
Yeah, I believe transportation is still free through TCAT and or Gadabout. Amy, you might know more.
Yep, that's it, Frank. You've got it. TCAT is continuing to partner with the free transportation, so they're offering that.
Okay, and then the last question is kids with special needs. Is there any type of way that we can get them vaccinated first?
Yeah, it's challenging. As you know, when we do these large clinics to call out single individuals, what I would encourage is that this setting, you know, a Mass setting isn't the best for every child, and we definitely know that. What I would encourage parents to do is if their child has special needs, and they're concerned about the Mass vaccine site, they should talk with their primary care provider, their pediatrician, or family practice. The offices will eventually be doing them in their office once we kind of get through this first initial bolus of kids. And if there's a child that has an underlying health condition where getting the vaccine is important for them, the best way to go about that would be through their primary care provider. And we'll work with those partners to find solutions. It is challenging because we can't meet everyone's needs immediately, but we definitely want to get every kid vaccinated. So I probably said it four times now, but we'd encourage them to talk to their pediatrician or their family care practice and try to work solutions out.
Great. Thank you.
Annie?
Thank you. So to clarify, if I'm thinking about the same email that Shauna was saying, so we had somebody, Vanessa Greenlee, asking from Newfield, that I think she had heard back from some people in that area. So kids that are more vulnerable, you know, have some medical needs. Wondering, I think that was, I could be wrong, but just wondering about like those kids being able to get the vaccine sooner. And then the other thing you're saying is, so between now and Thanksgiving, so that's 1, 2, 3, 3.5 weeks. So I guess just, mostly I'm worried about, you know, that population. And also the people who are the parents and other people who are homeschooling their kids, I think they go through BOCES to get, to get information or to get their, to get information on how to register their kids. Do you know if that's correct?
Yeah, we coordinated with BOCES. They have email addresses for everyone that homeschools that uses and gave them an email address. So they were contacted by BOCES, as well as the pediatric offices also sent the links out through their social media channels. So there were multiple ways that those folks might have been able to receive it. What I would suggest is that within the next 3 weeks, I imagine we'll get to a point where we might have more appointments than we do people to fill them. So I think if folks are patient with us, they'll see that there will be an opportunity here very shortly to get their kids registered. But for anyone that has particular health concerns for their child, their best course of action is to consult with their pediatrician or family practice folks to get some guidance. And I would also say again that some local pharmacies are doing children. Some of them are currently offering appointments. So there's that opportunity as well for a more one-on-one type approach if a parent wants to go that route.
Okay, so pharmacy, but it doesn't sound like the pediatricians are going to have the vaccine.
Locally here. Some of them do. Buttermilk Falls, I believe, ordered a small amount and is planning to do a handful of doses here. They're a small practice, so they couldn't give a lot of staff to come to the mall, so they are doing some for their clients. I don't know if they've announced appointments yet or not. Well-being, pediatrics, and Northeast Peds are giving a lot of resources to the mall, and so they're focusing there right now, but will eventually be offering it in their offices as well.
Okay, thank you. And I want to say I'm trying to clarify for the community, and I know you have been too, that this vaccination site or this mass vaccination is a little bit different. The last one was in conjunction with the hospital or with Keegan Medical, and then this one is being orchestrated and staffed and just by our health department. Is that correct?
And our local pediatric practice.
And the pediatrics. Okay. Well, thank you, and I appreciate all the work everybody's doing to do this.
Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Leslie. Yeah, this is real exciting. This is great. Is 211 still helping if people have more questions? So is that a good source they have?
Yeah, 211 was provided the registration links. Unfortunately, they filled in 20 minutes, so I don't think there was really much that they could do, but they will in the coming weeks as things slow down. They can also help with the transportation. So if someone has transportation needs related to vaccinations, they can call 211.
Okay, thank you. And boosters and first doses for 12 and up, those are through pharmacies now, right?
Yeah, pharmacies and some local primary care practices have vaccine as well. So you can try either of those. We did survey the pharmacies, and they are all offering one form or another of the vaccine. Not all of them have all three. So you might have to call around if you're looking for a particular one, but all of the local pharmacies are offering the vaccine for 12 and up.
Okay, thank you. And now here's a question, just kind of stepping way back here. We know, we keep hearing over and over about labor shortage, about people who are, you know, about jobs that are unfilled. We can't find people to do them. One of the big picture questions I've had is, could we have simply lost a significant number of working age people who died, the 750,000 Americans have died. Could that be a number of people of working age who simply have disappeared? I mean, I know, especially early on, most of the deaths were elderly. Do you have any big picture of the age distribution of victims?
Nationwide, I don't. Obviously, our number here is significantly smaller, and I don't think it had an impact on our labor force. But I'm sure the CDC has an age distribution for deaths. I just don't know that off the top of my head, Martha. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Thank you, Amy, Frank, Dom, Deanna, Lisa, everyone who's just working so hard on all of this. Thank you all for continuing to set the standard in Tompkins County. Much appreciated. Lisa, is there anything else from you?
No, that's it for me. I concur. We have a great team. Thank you very much.
Indeed. I know everybody's also tired. It's been going on for a while. But we're not giving up. Okay. What time is it? A little bit longer. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Okay. Let's just take a couple minutes, and we'll probably take a break at around 7:15.
Finance Director's report.
Oh, did I just miss Rick? He has a good report too.
Help me.
Miss you.
I'll go.
Finance Director Rick Schneider.
I'll go quick because I know y'all need a break. So we have two things to cover: the auction report, which is on your agenda, starting on page 44, the resolution. My report is on page 45 and 46, so if you want to turn to that, we'll look at that quickly. As you know, we successfully conducted our auction last Monday, and we sold 17 properties. The resolution that you will approve after this or later this evening at your choice is simply to give authorization to execute the quick claim deeds to those people who bought the 17 parcels at auction last week. This is a legal requirement that we have the legislature approve the sale. We tell the people when they buy the property that it is not theirs until the legislature acts. So I'm hoping that you will act tonight. The 17 properties are listed on the resolution O on page 44. And I also send out a booklet from the auctioneer that described in detail all the properties that were sold, including her pictures. Most of the properties were small slivers of properties or residential properties that were condemned. They're not fit to live in. There wasn't really anything really good on the list that would attract a lot of people, but we still nevertheless had a successful auction. So I'll turn to my report on page 45 to give you an update. We held the auction, and there were 45 registered bidders and 53 people attending. We thought it might be down this year because we changed the site where we held the auction from what used to be Green Star facility to now we had it at the Eagles Club, but we were pleasantly surprised that we had a really good turnout. We also had a good turnout the week before when we had the auction preview night the preceding Monday, and we had 50-plus people turn out for that. Every single one of those people in attendance came had never been to an auction before. I know that because the auctioneer asked that question, and nobody raised their hand. And the whole purpose for having that pre-screening meeting is so for people who haven't attended auctions before, they have a chance to answer questions about the process. They also get to view the properties and the pictures. a week ahead of time. So the net proceeds that the county was able to gather after this was $46,815. That's what we netted after all expenditures were paid. Total receipts coming in before expenses was $153,000, but we netted $46,800. That compares, well, there was no auction last year, so you can't compare it to last year. But if you go back, in 2019, we had a gain of $396,000. And in 2018, $231,000. So you can tell that this was a very much scaled back or smaller auction, mostly because we only had 17 properties. And that was 17 properties over the 2 years since we didn't have an auction last year. So yes, those 17 properties were a few of them from last year, which we didn't have an auction, and the rest of them were for this year's foreclosure. We budget $35,000 in revenue for this line item. So the $46,000 that we made actually exceeded our small budgeted line item of $35,000. And again, I ask you to approve this resolution either after my comments, resolution O, or later in the meeting at your choice. And I'll take any questions you might have about the auction before I move on to my next item.
Auction questions?
Going
once?
Going once? Going twice? I also want to commend those who worked. That was Drew.
You always wanted to do that, right? I don't know.
I'm hungry, so anything is happening. Go ahead,
Drew Brayman, deputy, was there to assist in the auction. Lisa Schott, Michelle Phillips, both from the Treasury Division, helped run and take the money at the auction. So we had four staff members there in all. It went very well, very smoothly. And I just want to thank them publicly for working a lot of extra hours, having moved this auction a couple of times this year and about three times last year, and we really had one. Glad it's over. Now, the last item I have, I'm going to share my screen quickly here. Casino revenue is something that you've been asking about quite a while. We got the third quarter in just yesterday. Our third quarter were of $625,386 in the left-hand column under third quarter far exceeds any quarter we've ever had to date. It's 156.4% increase compared to last year.
You are not muted.
What was that?
Sorry.
Okay. Year-to-date receipts are up $721,841 or 86.2% compared to last year. Our budget for this year is $675,000. So coming in for the year at $1.559 million, we're currently $884,000 over our casino revenue budget, and we still have one quarter to go. And I'll take questions on casino revenues.
I'm not the only person wowing. You just can't hear cat.
Rick, do we have a breakdown between the two casinos, or is it just a general figure we get?
No, I have that we have that broken down in our books. I don't have it in this report. But yes, we do have those figures recorded separately for Tioga and for Del Lago. Probably, let me stop sharing this.
Rick, how about we work in getting that for next time?
Sure.
That's all right.
I'll send it out to you after the meeting.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. That's all I have.
Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
I know I couldn't forget you. You're the bearer of good news. Any other questions for Rick?
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Do we want to vote on his quitclaim deed resolution just to get that out of the way since it's so timely? I think that's
just waiting for that.
That's resolution O, which I would be happy to move.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay, government operations. Who move? Well, I need Amanda, the chair.
Yeah, I defer to you.
Bring her resolution forward.
I'm happy to move the resolution O, authorization to execute quitclaim deed, sale of foreclosure properties at public auction.
Thank you, and I'll take it that Deborah seconded it. Any comments, questions, discussion? Let's vote on it.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Chick?
Yes.
Bigel?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Kerman?
Yes.
Yes.
Leslie McFean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Thank you all very much, and thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Why don't we go ahead and take a break at 7:16?
Wow.
Let's take a little feedback here in about 12 minutes or so. Okay. Thank you very much. We are back from a short break and resuming the meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature, November 4th, 2021. Where are we on the agenda? Let's see. We're on to standing and special committees, reports and resolutions. Let's go to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee and Corman Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So at our last meeting, I just lost my screen there. Can you come back to me after the next one? Sorry about that.
Yes, ma'am, I can do that. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair, are you ready?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. BCP has not met since our last legislature meeting. However, I did attend a meeting on the 25th with Comptroller DiNapoli, Assemblymember Kellis, some of DiNapoli's staff, and representatives from the city and town of Ithaca, Hal McKay from Homer, and representatives of Dryden. The comptroller was reporting on what the issues are in his office these days. Tracking the federal funds in and out of Albany was number one. He did mention that sales tax statewide was higher than even in 2019. In connection with which I mentioned that at least one of my colleagues was somewhat skeptical about sales tax reports because of the way they tracked the ups and downs of prior years. They're non-committal on that, but they did suggest though that since the sales tax was higher statewide overall, the numbers were probably pretty close to accurate. So we'll just wait and see. An adjustment is undoubtedly on the way. let's see, recovery statewide is still lagging substantially. Only 56% of the pre-COVID jobs are back in New York State. Pension fund news is good. Since March 1st of this year, the pension fund performance is up about 33%. However, how long-term that really is, because they've adjusted their method of accounting and their assumed rate of return, and that would have an impact on how the returns looked. They did say that in the future, the state's going to be needing to revisit having a Tier 6 in the retirement plan, because that seems to be a loser, and they're getting a lot of complaints about that. Let's see, what else did they talk about? Yeah, they reminded us that allocation and distribution are two very different animals, as if we didn't know that. I did ask the Medicaid reconciliation, and they seemed really surprised. I'm afraid I haven't followed up yet with that, so I probably should. The two things they mentioned as being crises going forward was a statewide serious shortage of EMS staff. The comptroller's office is apparently doing a study on that. And then the other issue is broadband, of course. They consider broadband rural and infrastructure and an economic issue, but it's a serious economic issue in urban areas. Finally, the comptroller noted that the CARES funding, the federal stimulus, was a game changer, obviously, for the state budget, but he acknowledged that federal stimulus money is a one-time event and won't solve the state's long-term deficit problem. He did say they're trying to, you're going to enjoy this, they're trying to make the most of their federal stimulus by using a substantial amount of it for pay-as-you-go capital projects. So, that's it.
All right. Deborah, do you want to mention the budget public hearing?
The what?
Public hearing for the budget?
Yes, the suppose I should. That is, let me check the date. Is it the 8th?
The 9th.
Oh, okay.
Tuesday. 9th at 7 p.m.
At 7 p.m. next Tuesday, November 9th, we will be having a public hearing on the budget.
And legislators, we need to make sure that at least 8 of us are here. So please be present.
Yes, ma'am.
Martha?
That's interesting about Medicaid reconciliation. I think I told Tiger about a conversation I had with Todd Sherman, who used to be the key finance staff in the Senate, Andrew Stewart Cousins' office, and now he's in DiNapoli's office.
Well, and apparently he wasn't there.
He wasn't there, and I guess the new, and I really went through a long conversation explaining this to Todd, who basically apologized for not realizing this problem while he was in the Senate Finance Office. So it's great that you mentioned it to the comptroller. I mean, that just helps with awareness of this issue, and it's, you know, it's really the sort of accountability issue that he's really been good about, and the fact that the counties now have been, through the FOIL requests, have gotten their numbers, that should really be ripe for a DiNapoli report.
Yeah, but I guess he can probably do the math, because I did mention that we were owed about $3.5 million. And, you know, you multiply that times all the counties in the state. And
yeah, but they got that federal one-time money. You know, they could just...
So now you want to spend theirs too, right?
Of course.
Anybody else have any other questions or comments for budget?
Was it 7 o'clock on November 9th?
It's 7 o'clock, yes.
So Tompkins County 2022 budget hearing, 7 p.m. next Tuesday, November 9th.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Annie, are you ready? That sounds like a Michael Jackson song. Are you ready? Are you ready? Oh. Go ahead. Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee, and Corman Chair.
Thank you. I have one little concern to see your small screen. Let's see. So we had our last Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee meeting
on 5th. And it was probably our shortest meeting of the year. There wasn't a lot on the agenda. A couple of things I just wanted to note that our planning commissioner, Katie Bergella, stated that they're still having difficulty hiring a senior planner. They've had a lot of staff to hire this year. And so as most everybody knows across the country and including here, it's a challenge trying to hire people. So the a resolution that was already passed earlier in our meeting on the consent agenda was continuing the Tompkins County Climate and Sustainability Energy Advisory Board. Most of us call that CASE, and they've been going for 2 years, and they've really contributed a lot. I often wonder, what we did without them. So they're really real asset, I think, to the county. And there are a lot of really intelligent, knowledgeable people that are working on that. So we moved to extend the term of that committee, that advisory board for 3 more years, and then we'll look at it again, what to do. And I wanted to thank those folks, including Darby Kiley from planning, who worked on that resolution. And so then the next resolution we have to be considered tonight is a resolution urging New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to deny Article 5 having to do with air and Article 4 having to do with acid rain permits for Greenwich Generating Station in Yates County, New York.
By Martha Robertson. Fifth question.
Thank you. I don't know if you want a discussion on this or if folks feel comfortable.
Nobody wants any discussion, so we're going to move to a vote.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Maury?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Shaw?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Hey, that carries unanimously. Deborah, all the questions are in?
Yes. Annie, I'm sorry, I missed your all-time short meeting because I was in that meeting with Comptroller DiNapoli. You mentioned that you passed a resolution extending the life of the CASE board.
Right.
Why does that not need to be considered by the full legislature? And if so, why is it not on this agenda?
I think it was consent agenda already.
Oh, all right.
Right.
Already gone.
Thanks.
So that's above my pay grade, that question. But I don't think there's any correlation, Deborah, in our meeting being short and you not being there, just so you know.
Yeah. Other discussion, Martha.
Yeah. I just missed what you said about hiring the new planner. I couldn't hear you.
They're going to go, I think, back to the drawing board again because they've just run into some of the same things that we have with other positions. So I don't remember all the exact details, so I won't try and reiterate it, but it might run into the beginning of next year.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Anything else for Annie? Thank you, Anne. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Granison, Chair.
Yes, we met a couple of weeks ago. We had we're going to discuss the diversity statement, but we haven't had input from everyone, so we put it on the next agenda. Could Alan Lockett of Facilities give us an update on ADA compliance? We also passed the Native American Heritage Proclamation. We're going to have a meeting on December 1st. That will be our last meeting of the year. It'll be a special meeting. We were due to meet the Wednesday before Christmas, so we moved it up.
Thank you, Henry. Any questions for Henry? And thank you, Henry, for bringing the proclamation forward. Mike Lane.
Just a comment, Henry. I don't know what that very interesting background you have is, but you're purple.
I'm wearing a purple T-shirt.
Yeah, kind of Star Wars thing happening there. Okay. Let's move to Housing and Economic Development.
Thank you, Leslyn. I think it's the Aurora Borealis. That's pretty nice. We last met on October 28th, just last week. Is that just last week? A very full agenda. We did talk about code enforcement again, later that afternoon, I also went to the TCOG meeting, and we discussed it there as well. Planning Department, Susan Landfried presented the Housing Snapshot, which Housing Department Sustainability, Planning and Sustainability does every year, and it was really full of information. I mean, a lot of data, really important data. And she's going to be doing a presentation at our December 7th legislature meeting, so that that everybody, because this is, it's really core information. What do we do about the housing crisis? We really need to know what the gaps are and what the trends are. So it was very important. We also got an interim report on the short-term rental study that the DPS is doing. Nick Helmhold is managing that. Really a lot of interesting data there as well. One takeaway, when you peel out all the, there's something like more than 1,900 short-term rentals listed. When you pull out the duplicates, when you pull out the things that aren't actually houses, for example, tents can be Airbnb. When you pull out, when you look at unique properties that are actually residential properties and unduplicated, there are 653 units in the county that are listed as short-term rentals. That's 653 housing units that residents can't live in. There are housing units that exist that have been built that are pulled out from availability. This is not somebody who's renting their kid's bedroom. It's not somebody who's renting for thanks, you know, for graduation weekend. So that's a meaningful part of our housing shortage. And it's gotten worse over the years. So I hope people, when he's got the full report, I hope people really pay attention to this. It's an important issue. We had a couple things on the consent agenda. I will just quickly mention the Convention and Visitors Bureau, Peggy Coleman, came to us to describe a new campaign they've got called Tompkins Together, with a nice logo that goes, and they've got materials all around the downtown and the restaurants, because they're really seeing an increase in rudeness to the servers and to the retail clerks in stores and restaurants. And it's not just tourists, it's local people, people who get mad that something's taking too long or get mad that that everything's not on the menu. And it's really been tough.
Did you say rudeness?
Rudeness, yep. Rudeness, yes, bad behavior. People just feeling that life should be what it was before, and entitled enough to be nasty to the people serving them. And it's so they've got this Tompkins Together campaign. I really support that, and I really, you know, we just, it's, you know, if your coffee doesn't come exactly when you want it, life doesn't end. It's really important that people treat each other like people. So those are the main things. The next meeting for HED is November 17th. We've moved it. It's 9:30. That's a Wednesday. We moved it because of Thanksgiving. So it'll come up sooner than expected this month.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that sounds a lot like what I've been reading is being experienced in the airline industry and hospitality across the country. It may be entitlement. It may just be that people are so very, very stressed by the long term, which is not an excuse by any means. But I would just ask people to try to remember that hospitality workers are probably more stressed than anyone else. So don't beat on them.
Yep. Thank you. Dan, what?
Well, I spoke with someone who was at the TCOG meeting for the code, kind of like code enforcement study presentation. And they started asking some questions and made me realize that I don't know some stuff. So I was wondering if you could remind me. I assume other people could use this refresher as well. First of all, this was an OTR. Was this an OTR we passed?
To do a study.
Yeah.
It's in the budget. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thanks. And
it's in the budget.
Only building codes that this position or this look at, or is it like other code enforcement that towns do, like dogs barking, like what does it encompass and what doesn't it?
It's what the what code officers, maybe in some towns code officers go after dog complaints, I don't know, but it would not be about land use permits, not like site plan review, nothing like that. But just to remind folks, this has come from a couple of places. The Human Services Coalition has identified real need for health and safety, like a floor on enforcement of health and safety rules in housing units in the county. Codes are on the books, but enforcement is what actually matters, and it's really inconsistent. And way too many unsafe, unhealthy housing units out there because of the enforcement. So it came from the Human Services Coalition. It has come from energy advocates who are looking at the new energy, stronger and stronger energy codes that are more and more technical, worried about enforcement there. Is that going to be adequate? In specifically, C.J. Randall, the town of Lansing planner, came to the Planning Advisory Board in January, February, and actually raised it again and said, you know, we have retirements. We have a lot of people who are aging out, and we're concerned we're not going to actually have the staff to do this work. It's going to get worse and worse from that point of view, which means that if somebody's building something, they have to wait longer and longer to get their approvals. This turns out to be, it's a statewide issue. Maybe it's a national issue, but it's a statewide issue. Southern Tier 8 is working on a study on this as well. So we put it on our agenda for HED as a goal for the year to look at this. And then CJ sent me some studies, and the most recent one was from Tioga County, CGR from Rochester, that's done a couple of our studies. A great study that they interviewed like every municipal official, supervisors, all different people, and laid out the different options. You know, it's everything from sharing software, no change in personnel, but sharing software that could help municipal offices, all the way to the county centralizing the enforcement of codes. And there are different layers of the code that could, like fire and safety, like I don't even know it all, but there are different pieces. It could be an a la carte kind of menu, literally. There are something like 8 counties that have at least partial countywide function, you know, where maybe all municipalities or some municipalities are done by the county. So it's, you know, it's not that unusual. So we just looked at the HED, looked at the Tioga County study, and I'm happy to send it out again. You just look at the executive summary and get a good sense of it. So the study is literally a study. We don't know what Tompkins County's municipalities, including the city, would want. That's why we would do the study. So it's not one of those things where we know what we want, we just need somebody to check the box. Now this is literally find out what would fit with the needs of the municipal governments and other stakeholders, like, say, the Human Services Coalition. It also turns out Jay Franklin is really quite enthusiastic about having this function within his department. There are a lot of ways that would support his operation and just, you know, really provide a lot of better service. So,
thank you. That helps.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Dan, for asking. Questions or comments from Martha? All right. Downtown Facilities Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Downtown Facilities has not met since the last ledge meeting. However, we have had fairly significant development happen over the last week. It looks as if our next meeting, which is Wednesday the 10th of this month, we will have presentations from both Habitat for Humanity and INHS on the property along the Sears Street section of the Tioga Street properties, and would invite all legislators to attend. You've all been sent a copy of the agenda. We will not be discussing the proposals as far as the vote goes at that meeting. We will be holding a special meeting sometime later in the month, and I will let y'all know when that happens. So anyway, that's all I've got for today.
All right. Thank you, Dave. So all legislators are invited to attend the Downtown Facilities Committee next Wednesday at 3 p.m.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Leslie. The Public Safety Committee met on October 21st. We had a good meeting. And I'd like to just start because I see our sheriff is with us. Derek Osborne is there on the screen. They've gone through a pretty significant round of training programs, and I wanted to commend our sheriff and undersheriff for going to a three-day training in White Plains put on by the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Officers. It was called Race and Justice, Finding Fair and Impartial Policing. I don't know, Derek, if you wanted to add anything to that.
No, I'll just say it was a very interesting and well put together conference. It was probably the best one I've been to in a long, long time. I was pleasantly surprised, learned a lot, gained some perspective I hadn't had before, and met a lot of really great instructors. The undersheriff had a conversation with one of them today in HR, and we're hoping to bring one of them locally to do some training for us and possibly other law enforcement agencies.
Thank you.
May I ask the sheriff, are you going to do a more in-depth report on it at public safety or anyplace else, or I can just give you a call? I'd love to hear more about what are some of the takeaways.
Yeah, you can certainly give me a call, Leslin, and I would be happy to present on it more in depth if somebody would like that. We still have the agenda from the conference and the discussion topics, and I could certainly share that as well.
Cool beans. Thank you. I'll give you a holler.
All right.
And I'd certainly be happy to set aside some time on the November 18th at our next public safety meeting.
Sorry, Rich, I wasn't trying to add to your agenda.
No, happy to. I would just let everybody know we also got a report at our public safety meeting on the backup
911 center and the progress of that initiative to get that up and running. I think that's a really important thing in the long term. We want to have that redundancy in case we need it, and we're working with Cornell University on getting there. We also had a report, and we passed the resolution on the consent agenda for the centralized arraignment program. This is a big deal, as Mike Sigler indicated. We had a representative of the Office of Court Administration from New York State attend the meeting, and we talked through how it would work. This is a big deal because it has been a change that has long been looked at as really helping us, and we couldn't seem to quite get there. I think this is one positive aspect of the pandemic, that we went to virtual arraignments, and we saw that there were different ways this could be accomplished. I certainly, early in my career, I did a fair amount of criminal defense work and would attend arraignments at whatever hour they were called. And you'd get a call in the middle of the night and you'd go out to a court. You had to wait for, the judge to show up, somebody from the police department, of course, the defendant, and a prosecutor, and you'd arraign the individual. It really is not optimal for lots of reasons, but one of the principal ones is you take police officers off the road and they basically have to wait with the defendant until the arraignment takes place and there's a disposition. You're talking about a significant amount of time. And what the centralized arraignment part does is standardizes all of that. There will be arraignments for a period of time starting at 8 in the morning and 8 in the evening, so that everybody knows when arraignments occur. It will also allow the court judges to share the responsibility. So you don't have to have a specific judge, but they will rotate so they know when they need to be in court rather than getting called in the middle of the night or the middle of the day. Of course, for the prosecutors and the defense attorneys, there's predictability as well. So this is a really worthy experiment that we're undertaking here. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions on that, but I'd also just finish my report by saying our jail population is at 34 with 4 board outs. So we're maintaining our numbers pretty much where they've been.
Thank you, Rich. Questions, Martha?
Yeah, I'm looking at the shared services plan. Somebody say this was either eligible or could be or wasn't. It's not on the list to study for next year.
You mean the centralized arraignment program?
Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know if Amy or Lisa has anything to say about that, but we did get a New York State grant, I believe $30,000, for building out the centralized arraignment part at the Sheriff's Department.
Amy unmuted. Did you want to say something to it, Amy?
Yeah, I can just say we did look at it. So you have to show what the cost savings would be and then provide how you would calculate that. And talking with the sheriff as well as Lance and Matt, we don't know that there will be a cost savings per se on that or how we would calculate that cost savings. We did look at it in the initial shared services plan and then decided to pull it because we do receive that grant funding and we're not seeing an overall cost savings.
Yeah, and I would say it's not really, the benefit isn't in dollars, it's in where our police officers are able to be for a long period of their shifts. But Derek, did you have something to add?
Thanks, Rich. No, you just said what I was going to say. This is more of an operational efficiency improvement. And a good one, a very strong one that is going to be a huge benefit to us in the community, not so much a financial one.
That's what I remember. I just want to have my memory refreshed. And, yeah, it does make not everything boils down to dollars and cents. Thank you very much.
Okay. Anything else for Rich or the sheriff? While we have him captive. No. All right.
Thank you. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you very much. We have not met since our last legislature meeting, and the next HHS meeting will be November 15th at 1 p.m.
Any questions for Shauna? All right, move to adjourn.
Hey.
I did. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We also met on Thursday, October 21st. We had a very interesting presentation from Mike Steele from the emergency response, or his director, about the backup center that's proposed for the emergency response department. It will be, as explained to us, will be at the Cornell East Hill Plaza, not in the plaza itself, but behind the plaza. It will be a joint operation with Cornell. It will be something that is used on a regular basis. It's not as though it's just going to sit there in mothballs all the time. It will give us the backup protection that we need should we have a problem with our downtown, or our other facility at the emergency response building. So that was quite interesting. I think some of the other departments have heard about it, or some of the other committees, I should say, have heard about it also. We have had a discussion about our committee goals. We thought it was time to review them. We've probably done about half of what we wanted to do, and we've still charting out a way to go forward with some of the other goals. That's why we call them goals, of course, because we often don't accomplish everything we want to, but often, sometimes we get there. There were several resolutions from the airport that went through on consent agenda, and then we had another discussion about this bridge program that you heard the people on that were turned out on the privilege of the floor tonight to talk about this. This passed on a divided vote in the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. And so I don't want to move that, but I will turn it to Ann Corman, who was actually the author of that resolution. She said she had a hell lot of help from Martha. So let's go there, unless anybody has any other questions I can answer outside of that one.
Before you get to your resolution, Mike, and maybe Rich, you know this, the backup site, I know we've been talking about that for a while as part of this.
Sure.
Wasn't there a backup 911 at the fire department where it used to be before we consolidated and moved out?
I am not sure about that.
Hmm.
I know what you're talking about on the central fire station. You know, that did not come up in the conversation. I think that had been retired when we combined the
when
two.
When we combined them?
I have not heard that either, Leslie.
Okay. So. Thank you. Any other questions, Mike? Mike, go ahead. Ann, go ahead and move the resolution. Resolution Ann.
Thank you. I'd like to move this resolution entitled Create a Policy for Municipalities of Tompkins County, whereby Tompkins County reimburses local share of Bridge New York grant up to 20%. And so I know we've had some emails about this today. It's been discussed in F&I several times.
Andy, Annie, can you hold on? Let me get a second for the resolution,
sure.
Please. Seconded by Glenn Morey. All right, discussion. Go ahead, Annie.
So in my eye, this is to codify pretty much what we're already doing, and it's just to give reassurance to municipalities that we're going to continue to reimburse them as we had. So there have been a couple of, at two, I believe at two F&I meetings where there were some amendments to change and to add on more requirements that they had to go through the county for various approvals, and they were voted down both times. So, and you heard people speak about it today. I also resent an email that Kathy Covert had sent about a week ago that the town of Ulysses also passed a resolution in support of this resolution that came out of the F&I about a week and a half ago.
Thank you. Other discussion? Dan Klein.
I would like to move an amendment. The amendment would start on line 26. We're on packet page 43, by the way. It would start on line 26, and it would add at the end of the first resolve. If the project meets design and other standards approved by both the county and the applicant municipality.
Amendment moved by Jim Klein, seconded by Mike Lane. Discussion on the amendment. Go ahead.
Thank you. This proposed amendment is not about the Freeze Road Bridge. Most of my colleagues have already indicated they have dropped their objections to the Freeze Road Bridge and will vote for that funding when it comes before the legislature. It was pointed out that I incorrectly stated at committee that we had already approved that funding. I apologize for my inaccurate statement. The resolution to authorize the Freeze Road Bridge funding had been pulled from an agenda by the chair of the legislature at that time. So forgive me for being a little confused about the status of its passage. When the time does come to vote on it, and we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, the legislature will be free to vote for or against this amendment, for or against that resolution. And this amendment today, whether or not it's passed, will be irrelevant to that vote. That is why I can accurately say that this amendment is not about the Freeze Road Bridge. This amendment is about one thing only. If county funds are to be used for a project, the county itself must approve of the project. The idea that this is even controversial remains puzzling to me. Right at the top of the list of responsibilities of the county legislature is financial oversight of the spending of public monies. We cannot abdicate this responsibility. The resolution, as written, does several things, and I could support all of them, except that it's missing one vital piece. What it does not do is give the county any say in how our own funds are spent. My amendment attempts to correct that oversight. Without this amendment, we are offering a blank check to anyone who wants to apply for a grant. Since the county will own and maintain these bridges, we have an obligation to ensure that the bridge meets our specifications. Again, I do not understand why that is a controversial idea. Having spent 6 years myself on the Danby Town Board, I am a huge advocate for supporting the towns. This resolution does support the towns, and my amendment does not take away anything from that support. I will also remind you that our record for paying for the town's local match on bridge funding is 100%. So any suggestion that we are not willing to step in and take over the town's local match is a counterfactual, unsupported by any evidence. Having said that, remember that we work for the county, not the towns. In addition to financial oversight, our other main responsibility is to act in the best interest of the county. These county-owned bridges are for the benefit of all county residents, not just the town residents. We have heard several times in the committee that my amendment is dangerous because the towns will be hesitant to apply for grant money if they are not guaranteed in advance that the county will take over their local match. I reached out to Joel Gannon, the Danby Town Supervisor. I read him my proposed amendment, and he said, quote, "Why wouldn't the county assert that right?" unquote.
I asked if he would be hesitant to apply for bridge grants if my amendment were adopted. He said, quote, no, no hesitation at all, unquote. I ran the same questions by Mark Whitmer, the Caroline Town Supervisor. It's a no-brainer, was his reply. I reached out to Nancy Thaler, Ulysses Town Supervisor, because she had been cited several times in the discussion as saying she would be hesitant to apply for bridge grants if it required county approval. Her response, quote, I don't think I said that, unquote. She went on to say, quote, the county needs to be a collaborator in the design process, unquote, and, quote, the bridge design should be done in consultation with the county, unquote. I ran my amendment language by her, and she said, quote, I don't think that language would prevent us from applying, unquote. We were presented with a resolution from the town of Ulysses on that topic. I would like to direct your attention to two items in that resolution. In that resolution, it says, quote, resolved that the Ulysses Town Board understands that changes to the resolution may be necessary during the county legislature's adoption process, unquote. Clearly, they don't think the policy as currently written needs to be the absolute last word on this topic. In the second resolve of their resolution, the town of Ulysses' own policy is cited, which says, quote, requires all grant applications are approved by the town board, unquote. The town itself has a policy that they must approve all projects before they are formally accepted by the town. My amendment would simply establish the same criteria for the county. Which brings me to my final point. The county already has a policy. It's called Grant Applications and Grant Acceptances. In it, it says, quote, any grant application or pre-application must have approval of the department head and must be copied to the appropriate program committee of the county board prior to submission to any funding source. The program committee is not required to act on the grant request, but may instruct the department head to withdraw the request, unquote. This policy does not anticipate the idea of another entity, such as a town, applying for a grant on behalf of the county, so I am not necessarily saying that our current grant policy applies in this case, but clearly, the intent of our current grant policy is that we, the county, have oversight of grants that the county is involved in. Once again, this should not be a controversial idea. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. I have a few hands up. I have Deborah, Shauna, Mike Lane. And I want to remind people that we've had lots of conversation around Freeze Road and other things a few months ago. And if we're not going to change minds, I'd like for us to move this along as quickly as we can. Deborah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I cannot vote for the amendment offered by Mr. Klein. I guess because I come from a planning board background, but I know that when the county weighs in on a local planning project, for example, they do a 239 review, which the local municipality is allowed to override by a supermajority vote. The idea is that municipalities have home rule rights. I know that their application for a Build New York grant or a Bridge New York grant is not exactly the same thing. However, I don't think it's simply a matter of saving the county money or overseeing how we spend our local share when these municipalities are saving us 80 or 90% of the cost of a bridge that we badly need. So I can't support this. I think if the concern that's motivating this is the cost of maintaining any so-called betterments to the project, then the solution to that would be that we have a policy or we enter into an MOU that makes it clear that if these betterments go beyond basic road and bridge maintenance, we won't pay for that. That's on the town. But this is overkill in my estimation because it suggests that the county would have veto power over the local municipality's plan for the bridge. And mind you, that plan has to be approved by the state DOT. Why do we need to be involved? Why do we need veto power? Nobody has said what would happen if the county and the state said, yes, that Tompkins County decided, no, we don't like that. Is that the end of the grant? I don't know. It's not clear.
Yeah, yes, that's actually
all
true.
All right, thank you.
Well, you know, there's a lot more I can say about this.
Your no vote on this. Shauna.
Yeah, I also, I will not be supporting the amendment. I have some bridges in my district, and I know that it's been controversial about my Forest Home bridges going from one lane or two lane, and I would really hate if any one of my colleagues held up what Forest Home would want to do. So I would not support that. I also agree with Deborah, if in fact the maintenance that the county does for these bridges is going to incur an overage or special maintenance, then I do in fact think that the municipality should have to pick up the tab for that. So I don't know if we would do that in this resolution or if we would talk about that in the future, but I would be interested in doing that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Shauna. Mike Lane.
I thought Dan spoke very well, and I thought he made very good points. I won't go over that anymore. I do want to say two things. One, remember we're talking not about a county bridge on a county highway or county bridges on county highways. We're talking about town roads, which are town responsibilities, and a bridge on a town road that the county has voluntarily agreed to maintain. So I don't think it's out of the question for the money that we are voluntarily paying to help a town maintain its road or roads that we have the ability to look at what is planned. This is all coming about because of a change in the state system. Always before, all the grant money for these kinds of bridges came directly to the county. And this was an idea of trying to share the wealth. However, they all knew at the state level that when they did it, the counties were going to have to step in because the counties were going to end up owning these bridges. And Deborah, the... what you suggested was a great idea about listing the kinds of betterments. We tried that in the committee. We tried to get that through, and it got voted down. We tried to put an amendment suggesting certain betterments would possibly not be funded by the county. But the majority of the committee, F&I, said no. And so that's why we're here this evening.
Thank you, Mike. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First off, I just want to say that I am bothered by Dan referencing town supervisor of Ulysses and referencing part of that conversation, and I will say possibly taking it out of context. I will try and clarify this in the respect of then I have talked to Nancy Zoller several times about this. I called her right after the F&I meeting that when Dan had his comments and quotes, and she said she just that the county has, yes, been very helpful in helping them with their bridge projects. She does not support another hurdle of the county having a sign-off to it, having an approval for these projects. So she offered to propose a resolution to publicly state the Ulysses Town Board opinion on this, and then they passed a resolution, which you received. So I think it speaks for itself. They passed a resolution supporting this resolution. So one thing that hasn't quite been clarified before is Mike might have kind of said a little bit about this, but when the towns, the villages, when they do help us with these projects, we actually get more projects done. And to me, that's a huge benefit to the community, that we are progressing faster with replacement of these bridges so that our community is safer. That's huge. So I will not be in favor of the amendment, and I'm ready to vote on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Folks, I'd like to get this to a vote quickly. Martha, Leslie, Rich, Henry.
First up, it's kind of not exactly credible that this is not about Freeze Road. Both the people said specifically in March at F&I and again in October in F&I, this is about Freeze Road Bridge. I'm looking on the point about the MOU and maintenance. The Jeff Smith sent us months ago the MOU that the town, that the county has with the town on the Forest Home Bridges. And they do get out. They work it out. They say, like, okay, you do the sidewalk, I'll do this. You know, they do it. Legislature's not involved. They talk all the time. John Wiebert at the last F&I meeting talked about, you know, well, how much, you know, would he want to have a role in this, in these bridges? He said, well, we really, you know, towns are, you know, there might be four or five of these projects approved every year. We can't possibly kind of be in the day-to-day decision-making and all the meetings about all those bridges. It's, you know, important that that's actually work that we share with the towns. It's important that this happens. And again, it's the towns putting themselves on the line to do that work and not get the money back until much later. Jim Scaly wrote us. He's another town board member. And by the way, it is my district. So there's that, you know. But Jim Scaly wrote about that, in fact, in the application to get the money, the town has to say that there's a commitment for how the local share is going to get covered. And they have to say that the county, and they end up saying, you know, the county will cover the local share because that's the agreement. And then they go through the whole approval process. It's federal money, so the Federal Highway Administration is involved, the state DOT is involved, and the local highway, you know, the town highway. So it's three levels of experts. In the case of Freeze Road, it was a historic property, so there had to also be historic review. If at the end of that whole design and negotiating process, and by the way, public comment is also required. The public process was a necessary part of the whole thing. If at the end the county then said, oh, wait, we're not going to pay for it, or we're only going to pay for this but not for that, then the grant goes away. That's an abrogation of the promise that was made in the grant application. And if that local share isn't paid as it was promised in the application, the town would lose the grant. So this is, and I'm concerned that this is not going to be settled. This is going to persist until the final checks are paid for this bridge. So I hope that at least we can put this policy in place to give, you know, maybe Dan and Caroline, when you explain this issue to them, Dan, they don't feel threatened. clearly Dryden feels threatened by this language.
Okay. Leslie.
Yes, thank you. Couple of thoughts. I know we've talked about this a lot. Appreciate the thoughtfulness that everybody's putting into it, right? This is important. This is big money. This is real infrastructure. Unfortunately, lots of bridges in New York State have been flagged as being poor, hazardous, could be, you know, up for being shut down. So let's think about our whole infrastructure system and think about the entire county and how that serves as part of a network of transportation systems. And we need these to be in good order. And if a grant program comes up that will help to offset the costs of fairly expensive critical infrastructure improvement, you know, there are 17,450 bridges in New York State. 50% are owned by municipalities. If we create any kind of roadblock, certainly some other municipalities are going to be applying for this grant. It's not going to last forever. I think that we have to be very thoughtful about what the county wants to and can maintain over time and make sure that, you know, our highway supervisor is a full participant in the process and scoping. We don't design bridges in-house, to my knowledge. I don't think we want to get into that work. You know, that's a specialty and expertise. And I think weighing in on what we think is reasonable, feasible, has to be part of the beginning, middle, and end of the discussions while we're working with the municipalities, the owners, the folks that are putting out the time to reach out and get these grants, manage them, working with the state and working with their local, you know, public, and you'll get lots of opinions from the public as well. Bringing all that to bear with the county at the table as an active partner, I think is healthy. I don't want to put a stopper on an opportunity that frankly we all need to take advantage of if we can. The bridge situation in New York is not great. It's quite bad, actually. And we have other critical infrastructure that we may need to be putting our money toward, water, sewer, otherwise. So I just want to be careful about putting language in, like, to meet our design standards, of which I'm not sure we have some. So, yeah, that's all. Thanks.
Thank you. I have Rich and then Mike Sigler. And then I'm on a call for a vote. Oh, and Henry, yes, sorry.
I support the amendment. I just am uncomfortable with the thought that we would make a statement in this resolution that we will commit county funds without knowing what we're spending the money for. That just seems antithetical to our charge, as Dan has indicated. That said, the Bridge New York grant program is a real opportunity. I don't know why we would obstruct towns from taking advantage of it. And certainly, I don't think we have. I've certainly voted for lots of bridges in my time on the legislature, and I anticipate I'll continue to do so. We want safe bridges, and we want to work with the local municipalities. It does sound like we have to be very careful about process, that we should be providing our review and assurance very early in the process and do that so that the towns can act knowing that the county's in lockstep with them. I'll vote for it.
Thank you. I do have Henry before you, Mike. Henry?
Yes. I assume Jess Smith is not on the call, not in his meeting.
I couldn't hear. What did he say?
No.
I assume Jeff Smith is not in his meeting.
No.
He's taking a medical issue.
He's not here.
He has a medical issue.
We don't need to put Jeff's business on blast. He's not here.
What was Jeff Smith's, can talk to F&I. What was Jeff Smith's position on this?
Jeff wrote the main resolution.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Mike Sigler.
I just want to be quick about this. So in normal circumstances, I would consider Dan's resolution, but I also have to appreciate the process. I mean, this has gone through committee. we have a committee structure, right? They vet these things. They are bringing this forward to us. And one of our department heads, who's kind of running the show on this, has weighed in at that committee. So, well, I appreciate that there will come a time sometimes when maybe something comes out of committee that someone doesn't appreciate, like doesn't approve of. I'm taking this to be one of those times. I have to give much more weight to what the committee has kind of decided, because I think they've vetted all the information. So, Dan, I thank you for bringing this forward, but I'm gonna decide with the committee, I think, on this resolution. So.
Madam Chair, point of information. Did Jeff Smith weigh in on the resolution as written or on the proposed amendment or both?
Let me ask the people, the chair of F&I and
he submitted the draft resolution that, and it was discussed a couple of meetings ago, and then this resolution was not the one in front of you, but very similar. And we talked about amendments a couple of times to that.
And what was Jeff Smith's position, if any?
His position was he liked what he wrote.
Which did not include the amendments.
I was just going to say this issue was specifically this amendment. In general, this about having the county have another having the county have this final say so, and it was brought up twice at two different meetings. And Jeff was against it, and then his second command was at the next meeting, and he was also against it. This is just about word for word, just a little bit of grammar change. This is, and Jeff, again, he's having some medical issues. He just replied to me earlier today to just thank you, because I CC'd him in today with the emails that I sent out regarding this, and he just said, thank you for keep bringing this forward.
Okay, so you've got your answer. Let's vote on the amendment.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Martha Robertson?
No.
Leslie Hsu?
No.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Shauna Black?
No.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
No.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
No.
We have 3 ayes and 9 noes.
Okay, the amendment fails. We're back to the main motion.
3 and 11. I'm sorry.
And 11.
I apologize, yes.
She wrote 11. She just said 9. back to the main motion that was presented from committee, and we vote on it, please. Yep, we're ready to vote.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Hsu?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion? Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
No.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
No.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
We have 12 ayes, 2 noes.
Okay. That carries. Is there anything else from F&I?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Sir Chair of F&I. Tompkins Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will meet next Tuesday, November 9th at 10:30. Deborah is writing a resolution on the cryptocurrency issue and crypto mining, which would go to the resolution we passed tonight was on, or last week, whatever. Now tonight was on for the comment to the DEC. Resolution will be to the legislature and the governor. And Ryan Gregoire from NYSAC is going to come and talk to us about the state budget issues. If you remember last year, NYSEC had early sort of conversations with the Division of Budget, and it was, you know, really good heads up on what they saw as the main issues. So that's in addition to Cornell reps, and that will be our agenda.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for Martha? Okay. Government Operations Committee, Amanda Champion, Chair. Amanda, you also had a resolution to pull from consent.
Thank you. We met today and shorter agenda, and we had a lot of laughs.
we have some now.
We'll go ahead. Sure. Sure, I think Mike Sigler is going to give us a few laughs here pretty soon.
No.
We talked with Rick Snyder about the auction, which we talked about earlier tonight. We had a couple of resolutions from the legislature. And then we did pass the resolution to recommend the appointments to the Independent Redistricting Commission. We went through that process. It was a good process. We came out with 9 wonderful, enthusiastic, and dedicated folks who are going to take the ball and run with it. That resolution will be coming to us for the full legislature to approve the appointments at our next meeting. But you should have gotten an email today from Kathy with the resolution, so you can see the names of the folks who have agreed to serve. Let's see. We did have a brief discussion that Rich brought up, and I thought it was a good time to bring it up. Just about, you know, in 2 months we're going to have a new legislature, a new chair, and we've had some, you know, a little bit of talk over recent months about how many committees we have, which is a bit burdensome to legislature clerks and staff. And so we talked a little bit about it. Jonathan reminded us that the charter provides that we would have between 5 and 8 committees. We currently have, I think, 10. So it does make sense if we want to be rethinking about that. Ultimately, the decision will be up to the next chair of what those committees will be, but GO is thinking that we will give some suggestions about what we think to whoever the next chair will be. And we are going to talk about it a little bit more at the next meeting, which will be the first Thursday of December at noon. And I can answer questions or go on to the resolution.
Any questions for Amanda? Okay.
All right. This was one we passed today. It is Resolution K, Designation of Newspaper, ID 10474. And I'm happy to move that, and I think...
I have a second, please. Seconded by Rich John. Mike Sigley, you pulled it from the consent agenda?
I do. I did, and I do withdraw it. Do I have to read it, that means? Because I threw away that page of mine. Then. just doing my piece? Okay, so every year this comes up.
Yeah.
Every year this comes up that we have to put this in the local paper, and it has to be the daily paper. And, we have one local paper. And, frankly, it's not a local paper anymore. And I get much more news from Tompkins Weekly and, you know, the Ithaca Times and, frankly, the online newspapers. And, frankly, they could use the cash. If they're going to cover our local news, then the state should allow them to actually publish these things. And if it has to be in a printed format, okay, then Weekly should be able to do it. And, or the Ithaca Journal could decide, listen, we are going to expend some money on covering Ithaca. I'm not talking every day here, but I don't think I've seen them appear in, you know, they'll go weeks at a time without reporting a local news story. And I get it. Times are tough for newspapers. I get it. But if you're going to be a newspaper, then you kind of have to be a newspaper.
And I vote against this every year. Obviously, we have to do this. I get it, but I get the opportunity to vote against it, and I'm going to. And if obviously it's close to failing or something, I'll have to reevaluate what my position is. But I don't have to do that right now. I get that luxury. So I hope that the state will look at this once again and say, you know what, we actually, it's better to have a strong weekly than a terribly weak daily. And I hope that they'll consider that.
So, Mr. Sigler?
That's my piece. Thank you.
I appreciate your passion about it. It even made you take your mask off, but you got
well, if we had reporters like our veteran, our, the head of our Veterans Department, still at the newspaper.
I mean, those are some bad reporters, man. They were good in the days.
Reaching back.
They still my first name.
So, Mr. Sigler, it seems like a interesting campaign is on your agenda to get the state to change from it has to be a daily to a weekly.
Sure.
So it can even be an online because, hey, we're going all digital now. So you might want to take it up,
right.
But then you wouldn't have anything to vote against next year.
I know Anna Kellis sits at home watching this meeting.
Michael and Martha Robertson.
Mike, you're 100% right.
The, also getting a third aid. So.
And every year, I pull my nose and I vote for this resolution. This year, I'm not going to.
My fair.
Hearts and minds, people.
The, what passes for a daily here has become nothing but an ad wrapper. And the lack of any coverage locally, there was no coverage. We just went through a local election cycle, nothing about it, except they did take the already printed up results from the Board of Elections and put that on in the paper, which anybody could have got online. I am pleased to say, with respect to weeklies, that a few years ago we made the decision that some of our important legal notices would be placed in the weeklies in addition to having to put it into the daily. So I guess I'm going to join you in a protest vote tonight.
The mic's off. Martha.
Well, it's hard to disagree with that. I mean, I will say there was a local story recently on the front page that was about the Dryden Rail Trail. And since I didn't get credit for the photos, I'm going to at least say it right here. Those are my photos. On the other hand, if we're going to contribute to the decline of the one paper, I mean, I don't know. It is really tragic. We used to have reporters at our committee meetings, you know. Anyway, so,
all right.
And you know, it's really good to start the wood stove going. So it's not for nothing. We have a paper.
Let's not burn down the house just yet. Let's not forget we got the Ithaca Voice as well. You know, online we've got a few other things, and we certainly can use them as well. But we have to designate something. I got it. Sean Leslie.
So I voted against it last year. I'm going to vote against it this year.
Uh-oh. Oh, my.
It's a movement.
So I have a question about this.
If
we all lodge a protest vote, what's our alternative that complies with whatever the requirements are that we must require?
Where's our attorney?
I'm just wondering what... What is there an alternative? Do only some people get to protest? What?
No, only some people get to protest. There is no alternative. I mean, if, for example, you pass a local law and you haven't appropriately published it, it could be found to be invalid. Of course, the law made perfect sense in 1955, and they just haven't updated it for, 70 years, and it's out of date. But it's the law.
Well, we've gotten the state to change a lot of things, and this might be something that we do take up, given the circumstances. But we cannot not, follow the law. You get something really profound.
No, I have a question, a follow-up for Jonathan. So I understand the consequence if we fail to put an ad in a newspaper that meets the requirements of the state statute. But if we fail to pass this resolution, but still put stuff in the Ithaca Journal when we have to, does that get us out of trouble?
Well, I mean, under the various laws, it says you publish it in the designated paper. So here you are designating the paper.
It
doesn't really get you out of trouble. I mean, I understand the protest vote, but, you know, as a practical matter, you have to designate the paper and publish the things in that paper, as dumb as that is.
But do we want to draw straws for who gets to protest and who doesn't?
No. Four protesters or three, and we're sticking with that tonight. Well, they designated a paper. And then we have to ask the state and petition the state to make sure that that changes. 55-year-old law, it's time for it to change. We're getting all digital. Look at this. We're doing remote meetings. Come on.
It doesn't work any place else today.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
You don't get to protest.
Who's going to vote? I vote yes.
Martha Robertson?
If somebody will write a resolution for Tiger, then I'll vote yes. I vote yes.
There you go.
Leslie Show?
No.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Shauna Black?
Nope.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Henry Granison?
No.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
No.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
That was a squeaker.
What I'm talking about. This is my gift to you. You need the legislature. Last chance I got.
Let's petition the state. Make it happen.
Oh, yeah.
Has the clerk announced the vote, please?
8 ayes, 6 noes.
Ooh, that's as close as we can. I couldn't tell you.
Oh, my goodness, you all. I'd already packed up to run out of here.
We're getting sleepy.
I was.
See how much fun GO is?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fun at GO.
So is that.
Are there no member files or resolutions? Let's take up the minutes before we go into executive session. By Shauna Black, may I have a second? Ann Corman does. Let's vote on the minutes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Moore?
Yes.
The Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Granison?
Are you protesting?
Yes. Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Norman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne? Yes. 15 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay. Minutes carry unanimously. Any unfinished business? I need a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of discussing labor negotiations as well as personnel issues related to a particular person or position. Moved by Henry Granison, seconded by Leslie Schill. All into executive session.
Right.
We have to vote. A second. Kathy's trying to write as fast as she can.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schiff?
Yes.
Sigler?
Yes.
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Well, the clerk is trying to get a vote.
All right, good. I've been gone.
Yes.
I said Dan Klein.
Yes.
Dan Korn.
Yes.
Klein.
Yes.
Nathan Clairborn. 14 ayes, 0 noes.
All right, executive session is called. We are going to take a break while we shut things down.